All right. Hello, everyone, again. I've got Jake Van Meter with me for the Legion section of our podcast. He's the guy who did it last time, and I imagine you've heard of him a time or two. Welcome back, Jake.
How you doing?
Everyone, this is the second time we've been through this. I lost the recording the first time. Well, didn't lose it. I didn't actually ever make it. So you'll understand if we are a little, perhaps, canned in our interactions. But regardless, we're going to push on through it. Okay, Jake, so starting off, what do you think about Lilith, the Reckoning of Everblight, or Lilith 3?
I actually like her. At first, I was a little bit skeptical about playing her. A huge base is definitely easy to get shot. The good things about that is that she has Windwall, which you can cast with Blood Boon if you kill a living model. So her Fury 5 really sort of balances out in a way. She's on a huge base with Ride-By attacks, which is something that a caster hasn't really had in her faction yet. So she's actually able to commit herself to a lot of the battle, chipping out infantry models or a couple damage into a heavy, and then getting back far enough so you're not going to be in melee retaliation range. So I feel that she adds a lot to the battle. I guess there's some matchup issues in there, but I do like her specifically against P. Krios, which was one of our problem matchups before.
P. Krios, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I guess she can't be knocked down, certainly, and there's no way to purify that fact.
Nope.
Does she have reach on her scything blades?
She does not.
Okay. I know at speed 9, she definitely can really make some ride-by attacks work. About how far do you usually go forward and backward on that?
That all depends on what I'm playing against and the position on the battle. Her max threat range in a straight line, if she tramples, is 24 inches.
So basically, if they move forward on top one at all, you could start shooting them bottom one.
If they are a low armor warcaster and they move forward far enough, you could potentially kill them fast.
She probably spends, I imagine, you know, virtually spends 3 from Windwall with the Blood Boon Etrion, 1 upkeeping, that's 4. Do you usually boost some hits and damage with your guns to get down to 1 or 2 fury?
It depends specifically on what I'm shooting at. So if I'm trying to apply my feet to a couple of different beasts, I probably won't kill any models that turn unless they're already wounded. So I really need to keep the 3 fury on me to cast Windwall if I'm going against a range heavy army.
That makes sense.
However, if I'm not worried about the bigger targets and I have striders to apply the feet, then I'll just chip away at little guys to be able to Blood Boon into Windwall.
I do hate striders. Any particular models that you take with Lilith 3 that you might not take with other casters?
Right now, I'm 50-50 with the Archangel with her. Escort definitely helps him a lot. She's the only warlock in our faction that increases his speed. So being able to ride by attack up 4 inches and back 4 inches is pretty huge, because the Archangel, out of all the gargantuans, is very squishy.
Yeah, he is, 46 hit points?
46 hit points, 11-18.
Yeeks. At least you have defensive animi and such to put on him.
Yep.
Lilith 3, what do you think about her tier list? Do you ever use that, or?
I played her tier list once, and after playing it, I realized that the shepherds in the list are actually very hard to utilize. They can be safe in Windwall, which is cool, but your army is so fast getting up there and trying to push the opponent into making, defensive positions or decisions.
Yeah.
And just try to stay safe from you, that they generally don't commit as much as I want them to.
And it kind of makes sense that, the space directly in front of Lilith would be at something of a premium, since she likes to move up and back, or, you know, basically be mobile. Seems like you wouldn't want to put people in the Windwall that weren't going forward very swiftly.
And that's one of the issues I've had, too, is that I've played lists where I put models in front of her, and then I get an order of activation issue where I want them to be protected, but they have to move out of the way first. So I've been trying to build in the bolt thrower with her just to help rectify that situation.
Plus kill Gorman. I mean, it's a thing to do.
All those guys. Gorman, anything that just straight up ruins her. Gorman ruins everything Legion does.
Well, at least with the bolt thrower and, of course, Lilith, you can be absolutely sure of putting him down.
Yeah. Lilith actually, like I said before, adds a lot to the battle. She can ride by attack, move in, make 2 melee attacks with her scything blades, and then take 3 shots and then buy more attacks if she wants to.
That is pretty stylish. Presumably more attacks with the scything. Oh, yeah, she's got Roth 1 on the gun, so she can't buy more shots with that, right?
But it's nice getting 3 shots every single turn. It's a set number, so it's not a D3 plus 1. It's not random, so it's always dependable.
Yeah. It's also, D3 damage, 18 hit points. She's probably basically 14, 18 because of the escort.
Yeah.
She looks kind of survivable.
She can take a couple good hits. 14, 18 is pretty good. You always have to factor in tenacity for 15, 19.
Ah, good point.
So a lot of the times she's very durable. She can take a lot of decent shots or even boostable shots. And a lot of people get really surprised at how durable she is.
Blood Boon works off only the gun, right?
Only your bow and only on living models because that's Blood Boon.
And so battle engines, as I recall, can shoot things that are in contact, or can shoot even while they're engaged. Is that possible?
I'm not really the rules guy. I know that she has weapons platform, which allows her to make melee and range attacks on the same activation. And I'm pretty sure they can make range attacks with models that are engaging them, I hope. I don't think so, because the Menoth battle engine can't.
Oh, right, yeah. I've had to shoot people with the thing, and that's why they bothered to put what's it called, gunfighter on the circle battle engine.
Yep.
Okay, well, I probably should know the rules before I start these podcasts. If you had to give...
We did this once already, and this didn't come up last time.
Well, it's a different thing each time, right?
So I'm sorry. The biggest issue I've encountered playing Lilith 3 is against infantry swarms, depending on your list build. I've been taking the Archangel and two heavies or four heavies. And when you get swarmed by Krix infantry or just a lot of cheap guys, it's really hard for her to try to clear them out while remaining safe. And trying to get her into a scenario zone with all those extra bodies is actually very hard to do.
Yeah, she probably doesn't dominate all. Well, I don't know. She's really mobile. Do you have any, like, pointers for someone who was starting with Lilith 3 and was just, you know, trying to build their list? Is there any particularly non-intuitive thing about her that you've learned?
The only over-the-top thing that I've learned from her is that when you take an angel and you're trying to go for a win, you can actually repulse three times in the same turn with her. And you declare ride or by attack. If something's within two, you can repulse immediately, push them back, continue your ride or by attack, repulse them again, and all other models within two then. And then you can finish your movement, make your attacks in the middle of your movement, trigger Blood Boon.
Right. You can cast an Animus with Blood Boon.
You can.
Like the Archangel's Animus.
Or you can cast Repulsion again.
That might be more effective.
So it's pretty cool. I mean, you can move models 9 inches away. I don't know why you'd have to move them 9 inches away, but it's a possibility.
I've been playing against what's his face, John Adams, and he's been playing four angels at least, sometimes more in his lists. It's crazy. They're everywhere.
Yeah, I was reading that list that he posted on the Legion forums in the list building section, and it had four angels with Heath Agrosh, and he helps. Their melee, just melee ability, help all legions melee ability, but they cross over as a heavy and an infantry clearing heavy. And when you're reliably hitting defense 13 because of Manifest Destiny, it really ups their game.
Yeah, I totally forgot the head overtake. He beat me really bad last night. I had Peace Scar, and ultimately she was charged by Thagrosh, which just shows you how bad of a state that game was in.
Is John Adams in your meta?
Yeah, John Adams lives in Atlanta now.
Oh, I was not aware of this. Now you have a Legion player to play against.
He is a Legion player. And apparently he previously was a Signar player, but he realized we had no Legion around here, and taking one for the team swapped over, or perhaps, you know, was blighted. I'm not sure how that happened.
And since Brian isn't playing Legion as much anymore, next time I see you, that means you're going to be all up to date on your Legion.
Tooled up on anti-Legion stuff. I will not forget that the beasts fly. Or try to hide behind clouds. Another thing I like to do that really doesn't work. All right, let's move on to our next war beast, the Afflictor.
So I feel like the Afflictor is an A plus light war beast.
Ooh.
He's kind of squishy. I mean, 18 life, 13, 15. There's nothing to really be happy about.
That's really. But
what he adds to the battle, the free models, the free points, a reach, flying, non-serpentine light war beast, means that he can also slam.
That is nice. I always forget the serpentine means you can't slam. I mean, from the other side, it always is, I can't knock him down, but I guess it's also a defect. And this guy would be free of that.
So he's a four-point guy, pretty squishy, but generally when you get into the infantry, make incubi, he kills 1 to 2 points worth of models, generates a one-point model, then walks up and kills one or two models. And then over another turn, he easily makes up his points back.
Yeah,
and because he's only a four-point model, and you're pushing into him with the rest of your forces, generally he gets overlooked for other models.
Even if he frenzies, you could still make an incubi, right?
You can.
That's pretty cool. Most models are helpless when they frenzy, or, you know, don't do their creator's will. Does his animus get used a lot?
You can use his animus with Spell Martyrs and Ethagrosh. I think that has a place. You can use his animus and his stack pawn in a two-caster game to Kallus.
Oh, heck, you could use it in a one-caster game, right? This thing could hang around Kallus and put shots on him? It's
That's
difficult to understand why you would do that, but you could.
You could.
I gotta say that a light with reach for 4 points is certainly something.
He definitely moved into that spot that generally the rake went to, and the rake filled the role very well, but now when you're generating free models from the Afflictor and the spawning vessel, it's kind of hard to pass up.
You know, lately, Legion has been making a lot of models. I mean, between this guy, as you point out, the spawning vessel is everywhere nowadays. We were just talking about an Ethagrosh list, and how he makes models if you punch him. It seems like, and Pythagrosh, of course, brings back Archangels. It seems like Legion is, if you're going for some sort of an attrition thing, a great thing to run into, as long as the other player isn't going to just beat you into the floor. Even if you lose, you might kill more points than are actually available for a normal enemy list.
And that has happened a lot of times in my games. I've had people kill way more points than I kill of theirs.
Well, as long as you win the end, right? The only,
it's all about the W.
Yep. So moving on across the thing to the other war beast here, we've got the Nephilim Bloodseer. I really haven't seen many people proxying this guy a lot. Nephilim in general are not terribly popular. What do you have to say about him? He's another reach light, that's something.
When you're a light war beast in the world of Hordes, you definitely need to fill a specific key role in order to be included in most lists.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at him initially, this is for everybody outside looking in. He's a 12-18 with 22 life, so he's pretty sturdy.
Mm-hmm.
He flies, which is always a plus.
Big plus.
He has brutal charge, so he's plus 2 damage on the charge, so he can goes up to a POW 14.
Yeah.
But his quirky abilities is that he's just like the Shaman. He has primal magic, so he's able to cast the animus of a friendly faction war beast in his command, I think it was.
Yep.
Maybe his command. And then he has telemetry, which helps your army hit magic attacks better within 5 of him. So when you look at him, people are really going to try to abuse the telemetry, which I guess you could do it with Evail if you really wanted to securely land your icy grip and your obliterations on a caster. Your Hex Hunters will be magic attack 8, which would help. But the quirky thing with him is that you can auto-hit your attacks with a Harrier's Animus.
Oh.
So all you have to do is use True Strike, and then you can slam a model. Auto hit the slam.
But flying, because you can go
flight,
over stuff.
Yep, you can take a bunch of free strikes, land as long as you have one life left, you're going to automatically hit your attack, and he'll slam them.
Style points. Let's see, is there any. I mean, 12-18 is just not really a glorious stat line.
You wouldn't think that, but it is a light.
That's true.
The last time I had a light in a game, I remember it was a Nephilim Protector standing up to Tiberion, and he didn't die.
Damn. Nephilim Protector is punching above his weight, or I guess blocking above his weight class there.
It was Colin's Tiberion
game.
Remember that?
I recall Colin. Yes, now I remember that game. That was, Colin is a great partner, and I respect him a great deal. That was not edited in, but it might feel like that. That team game was a heck of a game. I recall it. Gaff is also a funny name for a reach weapon. Alright, moving on, we've got the Warspear Chieftain for our next guy. And I've seen these things everywhere.
It definitely upped the investment into Warspears. Before, they were the Battle Box unit and MK1, those things were astonishing. Right before they came out with MK2, and the Warspear Chieftain really helped put them back onto the table. Giving that unit relentless charge and prey, as long as he's in play, is a huge, you know, it's a huge asset to the unit. And they're FA2, so you can take two of them and really just push a lot of high damage onto the opponent fast.
I mean, them only being 2 points is great.
It was needed. They're our first 2-point attachment.
Well, they certainly are a good 2-point attachment. As you point out, previously you'd see new players be like, what can I do with the war spears? And all the veterans tiptoe around being like, don't field war spears. And they're like, well, they have assault.
When you're assaulting prey targets, it's definitely worth it. If you can up their accuracy, even without the chieftain in play, their assaults really can contribute to taking out more models.
Yeah, assaults, my affection is a few of those too. It can be difficult to not strand the guys who don't make their charges. Because you have a very narrow, like, angle that you can charge. Well, you guys have reach, so I guess they can charge to a greater...
angle.
Yeah, angle. Yeah, that's cool. And range 8 is good on a thrown weapon.
It is pretty good. So their threat range is 16 on the assault throw, which is pretty good. And then if you get within the prey target, then it's 2 more inches.
I really envy you guys' set defense. That's an excellent ability to have on a model. Especially, you know, an 8-hit pointer who's probably not going to die to non-charge attacks from dudes unless they're Bane Thralls or whatever.
I mean, it helps their survivability against the Mat 6 troops on the charge. Mm-hmm. And you need more than... you really need to hit them with the charge attacks to one-shot them and get through them without committing 2 guys next turn.
Yeah.
To one.
You can't just walk up and be like, all right, my Reeve pokes you. It's okay, whatever, you know.
Yeah. But with these guys coming out, you definitely see... more or less skewed to them, so you see Pythagoras casting Fog of War, putting Draconic Blessing on them, so they're going to be pow 17 against their prey, and he can cycle it over. You have, and if you include the Black Frost Shard, you can go up to pow 19.
Yeah, that's no joke. Mm-mm. Unless you're an army that stacks armor really high. I mean, I imagine the enemy Pythagoras would find that to be something of a joke.
it would be fun.
Let's see. I noticed that the shaman, or the blood seer, the Nephilim there, couldn't do, character war beast. Do you have any idea why that would be the case? Because I know the Scorn one used to be able to do character beasts.
If you take him with Bethane, you would be able to put 3 instances of a Despoiler out there, which would completely shut down basically non-Bane Knight infantry from Grix and a lot of those other faction, Kyazi Assassins, things like that. So I think it'd be a little too much. You can take 2 of them. You could have 3 clouds out there. It would be a whole tactic with Bethane and the spoiler, and it wouldn't be fun.
Yeah, well, that is the ultimate rule. Although I'm, chuckling to think of Epic, or 3 Lilith, casting Despoiler and effectively being still hit by non-reach troops.
That would be funny.
Like, curse my giant base.
And then the shaman from Scorn could cast Despoiler's Animus, which is the within 10 inches pay double.
Oh, yes.
So that's another thing, too.
That makes sense. I was figuring they didn't want him casting Proteus' Animus and regenerating. Dun, dun, dun.
Too good.
Yeah, well, Proteus, he's really changed the way we all play. It's an invisible change. We all alter our lists in order to counter him so he doesn't show up so much.
What Proteus needs is to be 10 points and have Matt 7.
Isn't he already 10 points?
He's 11 points.
Oh, wow, that's preposterous.
Yes.
Yeah, both of those things are, Matt 7 and 10 points, I don't think even then I'd be like, oh no, it's Proteus, he's all up. You know, that would make him as expensive as, what, Molik Karn?
Molik Karn's 11, Molik's 12.
Okay, yeah, it's
but
perhaps...
at 10 points then, he's a, you know, Matt 6, Rat 6, 11 points with POW 16s and 14s.
I mean, Rat 6 though, I don't have any war beasts that are Rat 6.
He is a range 6 rat 6.
That sounds circly. Except we'd be rat 5. Enough about Proteus, although I imagine that you could perhaps speak at some length on him. What do you think of the Beast Mistress?
I think this solo is complete junk.
Could it run the Proteus?
It cannot run Proteus because they can only have lessers in its battle group.
Ah. Well, so, they had to limit it to keep Proteus out.
Definitely. It was way overpowered with Proteus.
Look out, Proteus is charging for free.
I think its battle group ability to allow the lessers to run a charge for free is really cute. It's definitely fury efficient, but she's really squishy at 14-13. Mm-hmm. She has 4 fury, which is cool. She has energizer, which is beneficial as well.
Yeah, that's really
but
good.
But what are these lessers contributing to her battle group and to your overall army build that your main battle group couldn't already do?
Well, you might not be able to put an extra 3 lessers in your main battle group because the extra 6 fury would be a problem, and you couldn't move them 3 inches and let them charge for free.
That is true, But generally, we just shoot and forget stuff like that. Get it out there, kill one or two models, let it sit there, and then you have to deal with it.
You are describing a method of play that is somewhat foreign. The only way I can really sympathize is that my pigs often have their little razor boars killed after they charge. but they are not shredders, and if I could take a Beastmistress and pigs, I might do that. But that probably doesn't speak much to the quality of the Beastmistress. Okay. So.
I feel like she doesn't add enough to your army unless we get another lesser coming up. I see no reason why she couldn't have been able to take a light war beast.
The only particular thing that seems interesting for her to me is you got those spray dudes. She could be like, I'm letting the spray dudes move out of activation 3 inches so they can aim and spray things. That seems
but they
cool.
also have a reach poison tail, too.
That just seems like double cool.
So you can energize them 3 and then charge them.
I'm loving it.
That gives them 14-inch threat range, but you also have to make sure that they're still within your 8-inch control area, unless you have a Shepherd that's going to run up there.
You've persuaded me. I think Beastmistress and Spray Dudes.
So your job back in your meta is to get both Brian and John Adams to make the Beastmistress rock. Because right now, all I'm going to do with her is field a bunch of lessers, hide her in the back corner of the board, and have them all run around like solos.
That seems somewhat bad, but, you know, let me see how it goes. I can't get Brian to play Legion for love or money, but John Adams will try anything once. About War Machine, probably.
So you can run or charge your whole battle group for free. They don't have to be in your control area, and if you really want to force them, you just have to have a Shepherd nearby.
And also, you have a Blood Rain caster in the back.
Ooh.
What if you need to put corrosion on something? Perhaps Venithrax's army. I don't know if you know this, but my Venithrax list has won the last 2 Dragon Cons and is looking to repeat this year.
You play Crix too?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we played 2010.
Yeah, yeah, I play Crix on the very rare games when I'm not playing Circle. And Dragon Con has a very surprisingly small tournament, and I always bring Venithrax there, and I always beat up Max.
Hey, props for winning with Venithrax. I like him. I've always liked him, just people don't play him.
Well, he's all right against Legion for the most part, because Legion has, forgive me, something of a problem with a heavy tanking caster. Mm-hmm. So, we come to the big guy. What do you think about the Archangel?
Overall, in the whole scheme of Gargantuans, I feel like Gargantuans compared to Colossals was a complete failure.
Ooh, not the book, but the models, right?
The models.
Because there's some things in the book that are pretty sweet.
Yeah. The focus mechanic makes sense on a Colossal, because you're trying to pool your resources to make it very effective with a high damage output. With Gargantuans, you're essentially losing a beast, so you're losing more fury and more attacks on the table to have a big package which doesn't have the output of 2 beasts and has less lives.
Yeah, I think you're right. I've been struggling to fit my Woldrath into many lists, and I imagine you're having similar troubles with the Archangel.
I've played him in a couple lists. I have him in a P. Lilith list. I have him in a P. Thags and Absalonia list. And I also play him with Lilith 3.
I got to admit, D3 plus 1 range 10 power 14 attacks feels better to me than Argon. But, they're not mostly gun beasts. You want to fight with this giant dragon.
No, definitely. And he's still pretty squishy, so unless you can really ramp up something, his defense or his armor, or keep him safe with increased speed from escort, he really just falters pretty quick to boostable range shooting, Menoth shooting, storm walls, things like that.
Wow, he's a dragon that's not immune to fire. That just feels weird. I mean, you could probably Primal Warp Wolf and kill this guy.
Oh, no joke.
If he doesn't have, you know, defensives of some sort.
And the funny thing is that when he initially came out and they revised the feat to allow him to be placed into play with Pythagoras, I thought you would see an influx of Pythagoras players, and you really haven't yet.
John has been experimenting with it.
Well, that's just John. What about at the conventions, though?
I can't recall having seen any of them with Pythagoras.
I saw some at Adepticon. I saw very few. I saw Pythag, I saw Absalonia, and that was it.
It's like the Woldrath. When the model first came out, I saw a few of them. Just, you know, remember Pagani's Woldrath 2 Fulcrum list?
Yep.
I think he won a game with that, too.
He did win a game with it.
Who are these people? Hey, at least it has open fists with reach, so it can do the whole I've grabbed your avatar sword thing.
It can, but then there's ways around that.
All right. So generally low feelings on this. We've still got a few minutes for a bonus. Have you seen the spoilers for these newly dropped, what are they called? Journeymen?
I did.
Let's talk about those for a second. We got five or so more minutes in this podcast.
All right.
What do you think about the Signarin, Allison Jakes?
I like her last name.
I like the
concept art. I think she looks really cool with her two daggers. Anytime you can get more focus efficiency in your army, I think it's going to be a good thing, obviously. And I think that's a big... I feel like with this next Journeyman Warcast release is that they're trying to help streamline the game so that the focus mechanic balances out the Fury mechanic. That's what I think is happening.
Does focus really need help? I mean, the focus side of things has not been doing badly. Crix has been winning an awful lot.
They have, and I was talking about this today as well. But when you take away the Fury mechanic's advantage from the game, all we really have left over War Machine is our ability to heal our beasts better, because we don't have the spells like War Machine. We don't have the feats like War Machine. We don't have the better defensive and offensive stats that the Jacks and the casters have.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So when you take away the Fury mechanic's ability to be as powerful as it is, then you give War Machine the upper hand advantage.
Yeah, I mean, War Machine has always... Yeah, I know there's some people who hate on Legion a lot, but I've never felt that the top three weren't Crix, Menoth, Signar.
I mean, Legion's a very good faction, but we do have a lot of squishy heavies. 11-18 is not a really good defensive stat.
No.
We come built in with Tenacity, which you have to purchase for 2 points. And our guys really do fall pretty fast, but we're fast, eye of the sight. We're glass cannons, so we definitely have to hit first and make a count, and if we don't, we lose.
Yeah, fair enough. So, I was going to say we got off topic a little bit. Allison has a spell called Duelist, which she throws, or something like that. It basically rowdifies one of their jacks. The thing gets +2 defense and becomes, you know, mostly unmovable, no knockdown, and then she herself gets those benefits. She stands in base. Her other spell is Energizer. I really can't see bringing her up into contact with her jack. I mean, even with raising her defense to 17, she's just a journeyman. She'll get shot in the face.
That's true. You could... There's a lot of things you can do with her. You can take your own Stormwall with her, run an E-Halialist if you really wanted to, so you're not putting all the focus on E-Halialist to run 2 Stormwalls.
P-Haley especially, because she spends all her focus barriering, and also because she can cancel enemy attempts to assassinate Jakes.
That's true.
I've been thinking about the following, though. You could play her with the Thunderhead, right? You put her upkeep on at the beginning of the game, and she stands way behind it. So, you know, you don't have any chance of getting her killed any more than, like, getting Wijnaleer killed, you know, way in the back. And this thing tools around being +2 defense, knockdown. And then when the time comes, she charges somebody in the back, casts the move 3 inches spell, Energizer, you know, from 8 inches behind it, backs herself up 3, and it gets that 3 inches extra threat range that the Storm or the Thunderhead loves so much.
Yeah, definitely. You can, and you could also do that if you wanted to with the new caster as well, to give that extra 3 inches in the pole.
Oh,
so it's
yeah.
A 6-inch increase.
Yeah. The new caster only pulls enemy models.
That's fine. So you pull them 3 inches closer and you energize yourself.
Ah, 3 inches. I see what you're saying. Yeah, you could totally just disintegrate all of their
infantry.
Infantry.
Anything that doesn't end up within 3 of him will get destroyed.
Yeah, when the thing walks past him and pulses.
Yeah.
And he could have teleported back so he doesn't, you know, have his trouble. Sidekick is the name of her ability.
The only thing is, other than Thunderhead, what other jacks would you really take with her?
I'm having trouble with that one.
Even Thunderhead. I mean, that's just theory right there.
Well, I mean, I like her buff on a jack. Like, a jack having that buff is a happy jack. Is it worth the points to have her living in the back with 3 focus and hope she doesn't get assassinated to turn the jack off? Maybe, maybe not. I kind of like the idea of her with, like, a Minuteman. You know, she throws the spell in at the end, it goes up and just is a harder jack to kill than normal.
Mm-hmm.
If need be, she can move at 3 so it can jump somewhere and then do its flak field. But I have trouble imagining her near her jack, base-to-base, like they're imagining, giving it focus and being cool. You know, like, she's got sprint, and she wants to fight with her swords, and a Warpwolf is going to boost an attack and take her head off.
You could take a Lancer, and it will be defense 17 and on the charge.
Okay, but the only thing it could arc would be her spells. I guess it would just be hard to kill.
That's really it.
E-Striker spell, positive charge, does that have to be Battle Group?
I'm not fairly certain.
It seems like having a Jack that was plus your defense and could, you know, get around with a 3-inch movement might be cool in his list. Yeah, I don't know. What do you think about the Menoth dude? He's got Fortify and Immolate and True Sight.
I see him really focusing on taking a Redeemer, or you can even take an Adjudicator if you really wanted to. Keep him way back there, and that would take the focus burden off any caster that wanted to run the Adjudicator.
And, you know, he's got an armor spell for it, which is cool.
The armor spell's cool. He has Isle of Sight or True Sight, wherever that ability is. Don't know why he has it, but he has it. It's pretty cool.
In case he needs to immolate. Durr.
Durr.
Okay, it seems difficult to imagine a four-focus guy immolating anything, but why not, right?
It could happen.
He could upkeep a spell and boost an immolate at something in the sort of end game scenario. Hey, he's got a blessed weapon. That's always cool.
But you could take him in a P-Sevy list, because you can still choir it up and IMN off, like they were saying in the little blurb on the page. And you see, you have a range 16, aren't they range 16? Range 16? Redeemers?
They're the Rocket Jacks, right?
Yeah. Brian, I think they're range 16.
Our local Menoth player basically plays punching Menoth. I don't see a lot of shooting Menoth.
I'm pretty sure they're 16. I feel stupid for saying it because I never, ever remember. But they're range 16. He can focus one by, or fuel one by himself, and you have the choir and P-Sevy, and it's just another range platform. It's pretty, I think it's pretty good.
That makes sense. I feel like in general, Menoth getting more focus is strong because Menoth jacks are better than other people's jacks.
Yep.
You know, with your choir and your vassals, I mean, we've all seen the nonsense that Menoth jacks can get up to. So just having another guy running one, especially with the Harbinger who can keep him alive, so they can't just, you know, boost a Hellfire at the guy and be like, eh, we're out.
No, he's definitely going to be pretty survivable standing in the back just feeling a long-range jack or with Harby.
Just give him a Reckoner. He can tool around the same area as, like, the book and the vassals do with her, where the enemy can't get, like, a beast that can buy multiple attacks, and if they want to shoot it, it's just another D3 damage.
Yeah.
Okay, the Crix guy, the jumping, harpooning, stealth, grievous wounds dude.
Out of all the Journeyman Warcasters, stat-wise and everything like that, he might not be the best overall. However, he's my personal favorite.
Hey, he has stealth.
He has built-in stealth. He has the Grievous Wound spell. He has the jump ability, so he can move 6, jump 5, and then he can harpoon something in.
There's 17 inches.
Boom.
And you might be suffering from the Withering and knocked down by a Scourge.
And then Grievous Wounds and one-shotted by a 3-point solo.
Would you give him any jacks?
I'm not sure.
I mean, escort is a thing. So giving a Crix Jack more speed is, you know, something that has to be considered. He's stealth, so he can generally survive handing out his focus. Could you see him with a Harrower?
How about Scavenger?
Oh, Scavenger, sure. It would be speed 9 charging, so 12.5-inch threat range. Grievous Wound Bite. Seems cool.
It could be Grievous Wound Bite. You can go in there, kill a model, and sprint away with escort.
Yeah, you could definitely, what's it called, you could try beating up on him like Tiberian or whatever, realize you're not going to finish him off, this guy's Scavenger comes flying in, finisher, damages him, he's Grievous Wounds.
There you go.
I like it. I also like the Jack that fuels itself, basically, the Harrower, the Soul Token thingy, for him, just because it likes plus
speed. There's a Harrower, and then there's Seethers, too, who generate their own focus, they run a charge for free.
Yeah, but they're kind of ass.
Do they run and charge for free?
They run and charge. They have aggressive.
Okay.
But I don't know. I never liked Seethers very much. I used to use them a lot. They're in my Venny list. They disappoint me. I don't like the POW 16s for 9 points. After I've recommended the Harrower, which is a POW 16 for 10 points.
He has a gun.
Yeah. And, well, he has Thresher and Reach and gets soul tokens. You know, when he fights things, he tends to have 6 focus.
Yeah. So that's definitely, I feel like all the Journeyman Warcasters can definitely fuel a ranged Warjack to help contribute to your game. And I think it's going to be very potent, and a lot of people are going to be doing it.
The Kaedoran one is very interesting to me, because he has a strength speed buff. That red line ability is a good spell to have on a Jack. I mean, that's just good.
The red line spell is a very good spell. The only issue I saw with him at first, even if he has Sucker, is that his defensive stats are still only 14, 13.
Yeah.
with five life. So if you can clear out the guys around him from Sucker, you can definitely one-shot him.
I heard people talking about having him run a conquest in, like, a P-Vlad list and being like, you know, one of your conquests has a strength slash speed buff. It's got signs of importance like the rest of them. It's got focus, and this guy just chills out in the back with the mechanics, and the mechanics fix the whole red line issue.
You can definitely do that, and I hear POW 24s kill stuff.
Everything. All things. Even Epic Baldur's list is like, what? 24?
Hey, not Father Lucan. You gotta watch out there.
Yeah, Father Lucan. As soon as he comes out. I have a whole convergence list. The thing I've been thinking about with them is I want to try Axis's tier. Really getting back to the only journeyman I was like, I am deeply unimpressed by you is the Retribution one.
I just don't understand her. She doesn't have anything that stands out as being super good. Convection's not that good of a spell.
No.
In the scheme of everything. Her ability to generate focus for her Jax is cool, but that means she's up there trying to kill stuff, and she only has sidestep, so it's not like she's getting away.
Yeah. She's like, I bopped a dude, I moved, I bopped a dude, I moved back 2 inches, now my Jax have focus. The Jax are like, yay, we do a thing. And then it was like, well, instead of having to kill a Jax, I kill you. Her counterattack rule is not going to protect her to the degree that people are acting like it will.
No.
The best thing I heard with her was, if you took, what's it called? Hypnos with her, it could, counterattack with its stationary fists on enemy Jax. That seems kind of cool.
That is kind of cool.
But,
you could also take one of the Gorgons and countercharge and try to put them in a weird position so stuff doesn't move.
I hadn't thought of that. And, thinking quickly about it, yeah, you could try and do that. But then you're allocating focus to Gorgons, which is, I mean, if you have to have it, you shouldn't give it focus. People will think you did it deliberately.
I can't even believe I remember that the Gorgon was in that faction.
Okay, you could see it with what other retjects never happen. Like a demon or a hydra? Okay, not a demon, because those things should be marshaled by sentinels, but a hydra I could see.
Yeah.
The Jack that you give it 3 focus, and then next round it has 3 focus, and she can have all her focus to try and survive, and it slowly depletes. Yeah, maybe.
So again, it's another range Jack on a Journeyman Warcaster.
Mm-hmm. Well, the only ones who really sort of beat that is, I think the Krix guy can run melee Jacks. Not that he couldn't run a Leviathan too, I mean, he could totally do that, but I think he can run a melee Jack. And then the last one is that Merc.
So this guy is gonna. This guy's the best, I think.
He's really impressive to me.
Not only is he a merc and go into every faction, but what he provides, basically sprint in range format, in range form.
Yeah.
So he can go up and shoot, and your battle group can get away. And he has two. He has rate of fire too.
Yep, and he is part of the battle group, so he can back up, right?
Definitely.
Cast run gun, move up, shoot somebody. His whatever moves up, shoot somebody, backs up. He's got that +2 range spell. I mean, he is a guy who is completely focused around doing what you want a journeyman warcaster to do, run range jacks.
That's right. And then, as everybody's already saying, now that Gaston's coming out, you can have your Galleon and Stormwall E-Haley list.
I've played against the E-Haley double colossal list. I fear it less than I do an E-Haley, just generalist list, but it's certainly still going to be strong. E-Haley could run, you know, Triumph Spam and she'd be strong. She's just that good.
Just think about the range potential in Signar with Galleon. He's range 14 with Fire Group. He's range 16 on his ports, and then you can snipe him.
Range 20 at this point. Dougal McNeil, 22.
Boom.
Yeah.
So if you start 7 inches up and you move up 5, because he's speed 5, right?
Yeah.
It's 12, and then you shoot 22, so you're 7, 5, 12, plus 22 is 34.
34 they start is, up 10. Without question, yeah, that's 44. So you're shooting into their AD line.
Yes.
On top one, which is just really funny. I mean, there are casters that can be AD, with, for example, Makeda 3's tier list, or I believe Gareth's tier list. You could top one assassinate.
Potentially, if...
If you rolled like a god.
Rolled like a god and got through all the transfers.
It would have to be Gareth. You couldn't do it through the transfers.
Have to kill him with blast damage.
Yes, clearly. He stood next to a thing when he deployed that is not stealth, and then you blast damage him 6 times.
Yes.
It's a complicated plan, but it seems like it would be possible now if you roll a lot of boxcars to do a top one assassination. Welcome back, Mark One.
Dice minus 13.
Okay, maybe, perhaps not a six shot. I don't know. It is just a whim moment here. Alright, so the last one is the actual Warcasters. We got those two new, the Sturgis caster is his name, right?
Yes, Dallin Sturgis.
Dallin Sturgis. He is a really cool looking dude with his Darth Maul dual blade gun. What do you think about the Signar version?
Out of the two versions, the Signar version is my favorite. Just reading the stats and what he contributes to the game. Relentless charge on any model is always good, so we can pathfinder charge on in. The double hit teleport, or the flash step, or whatever it's called, is pretty good as well, because it can push you forward even more, so that you can feed and pull models in and then teleport away.
That seems true. What kind of army do you think he wants with those great spells? You know, he's got Snipe, Arcane Shield, Teleport, Convection, Lightning Storm. I might be forgetting one.
Snipe?
Yeah.
Yes. I couldn't really tell you. I haven't really thought of a build since I don't play Signar.
Yeah, no, I'm in the same boat. I'm like, Signar has gun mages, and they probably have other things.
I like the addition of a Lightning Storm on him. I like any type of spell that puts an AoE in play that lasts for more than one round that causes damage to enemy models entering it, because it blocks line of sight. Not line of sight. It blocks models moving. And if they don't have reach, you can actually stand in the center of it and be fine.
Yep, here come Bane Thralls. I throw this thing at the objective. Now they can't destroy it. Unless, you know, they're willing to suck up that Powtan and hope you don't roll sixes.
Yeah. So he has tons of attacks, though, which is really cool. And any caster that has teleport, A-plus in my book.
I don't know about A-plus, but I think he's
not
a guy
A-plus,
who
but
will...
that spell is A-plus.
Yeah, having teleport is a good thing in the same way as if you were like, I'm a new caster, and I'm like, what do you do? And you're like, purification. And I'm like, I'm listening. You know, tell me more. And then his feet moves the enemy models, which is amazing. But I think his feet is better in Krix, because moving closer to Krix is bad, and moving closer to Signar is good.
I don't like his two-sided ability with his weapon in the Krix form.
It is certainly less... less devastating than feedback and, what's it called, lightning straight.
Electro leap?
Yeah.
So, and then he has chain attack, Death Shroud, which sounds weird because it's not like you're not going to run your...
Yeah, they're going to be dark shrouded when he starts.
Yeah.
But he's got Parasite and Occultation, which are totally serious spells. He has teleport, and his feet moves you closer to the Krixian army.
That's true.
I mean, that's a 3-inch threat increase for Bile Thralls, for Tartarus, you know, that's a very big deal in Krix.
I agree. I'm going to wait for Iron Gauntlet, just like everybody else is waiting for, so that somebody can play both of his versions in Iron Gauntlet.
That seems pretty awesome. I hadn't thought of that. I'm looking at a Krix caster. I didn't like P. Haley. I used her poorly in my Iron Gauntlet competition. I'm looking to try and get a Krix caster in my second one.
Something else he also said in the Kickstarter when I was reading through it is that Lieutenant Allison Jakes is actually going to be a Warcaster eventually.
Huh.
She's going to go up in rank and have full-fledged spell list and more focus, all that.
I'm not lying to you. She seems like the sort of person who, like, when you read the fluff about a caster, you're like, this caster could be awesome, or this caster is going to suck. You know, frequently, when they spoil the little blurb, you can already see, like, you like to hear that they have, I don't know, ninja powers or time powers or help their buddies, you know, like, there's fluff that makes the caster sound great, and there's ones where you're like, meh. Being a cool ninja makes me think, what's her face? Ashlyn? Yeah. So a Signar and Ashlyn would be really cool.
She definitely, when she goes to being a Warcaster, she'll need stat increases and power and things like that to be like that without being more of a just finesse control.
But I mean, no part of Signar is getting a cool ninja chick makes me unhappy. You know, if nothing else, she doesn't seem like the sort of person who's going to buff their range game. So she might be another attempt at the Constance Blaze, like, look, here's a way for Signar to fight you.
You just got your first Reach Weapon Master troop. That's actually in faction. Let's not wish for too much at once.
I'm just saying that it seems like games against Signar could be less boring. They might not always be gunlines.
Fun lines.
how, they're like, all right, new knights. You're like, no, actually, they're gun mages on horses. I'm like, what do they do? Shoot you and back up. It's better than shooting.
More Powtens. Take more Powtens.
I don't know. My whole Balder list may be a reaction to the aggravation of gun lines. Like, you know what, buddy? You designed a list to shoot me. I designed a list that you can shoot me with. There, we're both happy.
And it's doing well.
Well, it can handle a gun line. I'll say that for it.
Have you run in hardcore, have you run into an E-Gatsby matchup with that list yet?
No, but I'm confident that I could win it. I just never get to prove it. I've run into E-Gatsby in non-hardcore, and I've run into things in hardcore that beat me, but none have been E-Gatsby. I actually got beat by a Crixian troop swarm, which I didn't think was going to happen, but Tom Gwan did so by the simple expedient of taking all the Banes.
Tom Gwan!
He had a Peace Guard and 30 Banes and ran me the hell over. Now, I also beat him once that week. We were 1-1 at DICON, but I had been bragging that, you know, my E-Walder list can totally handle a Crixian troop swarm, and then the scenario required us to take two zones at once, and
that did not work out so well.
I'm much better at hardcore with that list. I like to bunker when I have to split up and there's 30 Bane Thralls and or Bane Knights and Peace Guard's feet. It's dangerous.
No, I hear you. I understand how that is.
Yeah. It's one of those things where you get to the table and you're looking at it and you're like, wow, I need an easy opponent this round because I don't want to do this. You know, destruction or whatever for a scenario list. You're like, look, the Stormlord can push you back, but not for the 5 turns it takes to win this nonsense.
True.
All right, man. I think we're about done. Thanks for doing the recording again, man.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
I got the last other recording, so this should go out either tonight or tomorrow.
Cool.
All right. I'm going to stop the recording now. Okay. Hello, everyone. This is Walter at the increasingly misnamed Team ATL podcast, and with me I have Jason Flanzer, who is going to be our substitute Trollbloods expert for this one. Flanzer, how's it going?
It's going pretty fantastic. It's been raining a lot, I guess, all over the country. And for Phoenix, that is really rare. But we are in now our wet and hot season. But it's going really good.
Yeah, Atlanta is effectively submerged. It's comedic the amount of rain we have. I mean, it's ridiculous. So what do you think overall about the quality of the releases that y'all got in Gargantuan's as compared to everyone else?
I think that comparatively, we actually turned out all right. You know, there's certainly different factions have different shining moments. For the first time in a long time, I don't feel like Trollbloods were the worst of all the entries. So I think that in itself is a victory for the faction.
You guys pulled ahead of Pharaoh?
Well, you know, not including minions, of course. No, but I feel like there's some very good Legion entries, but in my opinion, I don't think that theirs was the strongest. I think that it was probably the weakest of the four factions, in my opinion.
Yeah, I feel like lately Legion hasn't been getting quite as great stuff as everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, but their stable's already so strong, you know. Mm-hmm. And then in the last book they got Evail to add some depth to what they got going on. So it's not needed.
Yeah, yesterday I got kicked around by a list that was Evail, 6 Angeliuses, and a pot.
6 angels in a pot.
There was also 2 shepherds, but I was just like, my God, that's so many angels.
That's absolutely ridiculous. That's what someone out here on the West Coast was running. Brandon, who got second in Iron Gauntlet, he was running. He's running Evail with 3 angels and 3 Ravagors, so something like that.
So many heavies because they get that benefit.
Yes.
Have you looked at your new Warlock new Warlock Epic Grimm and his tier list?
Yeah, I have. His Steam Force is rather interesting. I guess to go through some of the points that are good and or bad about it. You know, really non-restricted war beasts, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
The units, you do see the Trollkin Highwaymen in there, a unit that's not yet released. So, you know, I guess we can assume that that's something we'll see soon. I believe it's probably a light cavalry troll unit. But I could be wrong.
What would light troll cavalry ride?
I think they just ride horses. I mean, trolls are big, but like smaller trolls aren't that big. And I think that they, you know, if you know, armored up Iron Fangs can ride on horses and Man of War can ride on horses, then there's probably some trolls that are a little more slender
yeah,
that can ride some horses.
You got it with the Man of War thing. I mean, the Dracoon totally if he can ride a horse, anybody can ride a horse.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that is a rather unique, special horse bred in the fine stables of Umbry, but I think that they can find a horse for the trolls.
I could buy that.
And then scouts, sluggers, thumper crews, bushwhackers, not the finest selection of units. I do love scouts, but the rest of it is, thumper crews are actually solid too, and I actually have been running bushwhackers with Grimm in my playtest recently, so I can't say it's that bad. Sluggers, I just can't, I'm the kind of person who's willing to try everything, give everything its honest chance, and sluggers just are not hitting the mark for me.
Are those the guys with the machine guns?
Yeah, the ones that have to stand still to get the D3 shots.
Well, if they were ever going to hit the mark, it would be with Epic Grimm, with his teleport spell and his feet.
And mortality. Yeah, so, he's definitely giving them the chance that they need. I'm not sure that it fixes them or helps them. I think that the fact that they're 5 wounds to raise their price up was a little unnecessary.
Yeah, if they were just one wound. And
they're just one wound cheaper. Or cheaper, yeah, more or cheap. Either or, I think that would have been better for them. And then Fellcaller solos, going through, you do get cheaper thumper crews. You get ambushing scouts. I'm not sure how helpful that is. They're not super fast. They don't have reach.
But don't they have assault? I mean, that seems pretty pimp. You'll always get back arc from assaults.
Yeah, and that's not so bad with Rad 5. It's not terrible. And scouts can handle things themselves. They have gang, so they can get up to that mat 8, so they can harass tons of things in melee once they get delivered. I'm just not sure that that's what I want them. If I wanted them to come from the side, I could run them there. They have AD, they have Pathfinder, they have Prowl, so they're rather survival by themselves. And with AD, I can pretty much be where they would be ambushing, but also potentially controlling a zone, camping them 4 inches around a flag, something like that.
That is nice. Although the counterpoint is always that when you ambush, you are safe from, Denegger's feet and shit. I mean,
That is true.
You can't die when you're not on the board.
That is true. And then you have to include a bunch of light war beasts. Your light war beasts gain AD. Not really a benefit that's too great, but I guess you could toss in tons of impalers and bring a mauler with them and throw out some really huge spears at people.
Trolls have light war beasts, but they
do. I like a lot of the lights. I'm just not sure that AD is something that I'm reaching for. And then 2-inch extended deployment for bringing one unit of bushwhackers. It is, it's not that much to ask for 2 inches of deployment. I generally like the 2 inches deployment theme force benefit myself.
Yeah, no, that's pimp.
It's strong. So I'm not sure that the hunting party theme force is necessarily something that you'll see a lot, but maybe it's something that you could work into something great. It doesn't hop off the page as fantastic. It also doesn't hop off the page as absolutely terrible, but it's somewhere probably at the low end.
Yeah, you still get your fell colors. It's something.
Yes, that is something.
So let's shade into a discussion of Epic Grimm himself. Now, this is a bit of a tough question since you didn't have to rate the casters last time, but would you put him in the top third or the middle third or the bottom third of Troll Plutz casters?
I think he's snugly in the middle third. He has a spell list that is very interesting. A lot of them are more situational than not. He does bring a brand new spell that is absolutely ball-bustingly great, mortality.
Yeah.
It's -2 defense and armor, cannot be healed, which is so fantastic for those annoying tough units. Like a unit of Boomhowlers just cries when they see him. It's range 10 as well, and you can extend that to 12 with Bone Grinders. People say they like doing that, but with the reform built into him, and I guess that's something we'll talk about, he can kind of play with the range himself, so I don't think it's necessary to spend 2 more points on more support. That being said, he has that spell is fantastic. I'm not sure that he's necessarily doing something for trolls that we necessarily need. His feat is probably one of our worst feats, in my opinion.
Well, it's definitely a shooting troll's feat. If you're a brick troll, you're fantastic.
Yeah, and while I generally have been seen competitively playing the brick style of troll, that does not mean I'm not willing to play the shooting trolls. What I'm currently pairing with my P Doomshaper list is a regular Grimm 1 list, and it's, there's no stone, there's no brick. It fans out, and I push up really aggressively, and so it's not necessarily that style of brick troll. That being said, snipe for everything's cool. I really find it hard to gain mark target advantage without just blatantly running models out there. I guess it could be cool with burrowers standing still and getting the mark target. That's pretty sharp, but I'm not sure that the feat is when I saw it, it's certainly the worst part of this caster unit for me.
I've battled against him a number of times. The thing that I see the Feet do the most work with is, what are those dudes called? Scatter gunners, yeah. The guys who want to charge and spray. They tend to get that +2 and they really need it because they have fairly bad rat.
Yeah, rat 5. I mean, it's serviceable and with mortality you can actually use it all game and be pretty effective. That being said, with mortality being rat 9, that's even better. So.
Yeah.
I do enjoy it. I actually recently made a list, that I worked on back at the World Team Championship practice weekend, and it has 2 units of bushwhackers in it. And it's kind of comical, but on the Feet turn, putting 2 range 18 POW 20s into whatever you like it's pretty devastating. You know, if you leave your caster with, and it's not even leaving him out there because you're moving 6 with range 18. I mean, it could be, as long as they just can get a line, if there's a hill on your side, you better be watching out for a POW 20 to your caster's face. So.
Yeah, that +2 defense doesn't fucking help when it's a 10-man CRA.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. It doesn't really matter at that point because, you know, they're going to go up to rat 14. So they're hitting most casters, you know, defense 18 caster with some kind of, you know, camouflage or whatever, or concealment. They're hitting that on a 4, so.
Yeah, if nobody ran up to mark you.
Correct. Oh yeah, exactly.
You know, it's some buffalo asshole comes charging past your dudes. I also like mage sight with him. You can, you know, just shoot things that are hidden with stealth. That's always cool.
Yeah, if it wasn't just your battle group, it would be fantastic. But because it's just your battle group, you're really limited in your options. Cause he's moving up, casting mage sight for 2 of his 6. And then I guess he's shooting, which means you're not getting mortality out. The spell, the problem with mortality, it's kind of like a catch-22. The spell is so good that you literally want to cast it every single turn. It is that good. And even with -1 cost from the Rune Bear, it's still a large chunk because it's probably something you're going to want to boost at a magic score of 6, which is his Fury stat.
Yeah.
So you're spending 3 if you have a Rune Bear, 4 if you don't. And then you're always dry. Like, he's just always dry. And if you're mage sighting, then, you know, now you're really dry. You're not boosting your gunshot, which is a fantastic now rat 8 gun. Headhunter, still range 13, POW 13.
True.
He's a very mean guy with that gun. And so mage sight to me has always seemed like, it's like, oh, I have to cast mage sight to kill that shifting stone, or I have to cast mage sight to try to kill their caster. And I'm not one to rely on my bombers or whatever to go do the damage themselves. I'm going to bring them and they're going to put damage into heavies, but if I'm going to try to kill a caster, like if I need 11s, for example, it's not worth me mage sighting and like taking a risk. I'd rather just play the attrition game, blow up what's in front of me, and we'll get there eventually.
Yeah. And, ultimately the caster will come up and spend his focus killing a beast or whatever. And then you got him.
Yeah, exactly. So it seems like the kind of spell that's far reaching, and without a really strong battle group of range, you can't use it at all. And even if you do have that, you're pigeonholed into that range, and hopefully if they do bring any kind of range defense, you're still not being helped. So mage sight, it really hurts because he did lose the, true sight that he used to have.
Yeah.
So he now needs it to kill those stealth models, which he was so fantastic at doing. So I think I think Mage Sight is a downgrade from him having True Sight himself.
That seems fair to say. So in a general turn for him, I'm imagining you upkeep Mirage, you cast a cheaper boosted mortality for 3, so you've spent 4, you boost either the hit or the damage on your gun, you sit on 1.
Yeah, I mean and that's the thing, it plays itself. I mean, you named it. Even when I was like, okay, I'm gonna play some games where I'm not upkeeping Mirage. So sure. I'm still, now I have 2, and maybe I will boost that attack roll. So it's like, it's so hard for him to actually do something other than what is blatantly obvious, and I think that will end up being his weakness. He does have some really, his unit is pretty sharp, and also with 4 Warbeast points and the 2 solo, or the two guys in the unit, I actually think his value, as far as beast points is concerned, is pretty good. 6, maybe even effectively a 7, because these guys end up being incredibly effective throughout the game.
Yeah, they're more like 2-point solos. I mean,
Maybe 1.5, but that would put him up to a 7 beast points, which is really strong, in my opinion.
I don't have any, you know, we're not audited by Private GI, I can say it. I think they're 2 points each. I mean, the one guy who puts that net down, nothing in the game can ignore that net. I mean, you have to be steady. I once had to charge fucking, Morag, Beastlord Morag in there. Like, if he rolls an 8, my 5-point solo is knocked down, murdered.
Yeah. No, it's a very good zone control. My one problem with it is it does hurt my models as well. So because Grim, once again, you want to leave with that mortality so your army gets the benefit of it, or you want to leave with that feat so you can actually do that. If he's dropping the trap, you're zoning yourself as well. So that's a concern for me personally. But the zone is fantastic. It really limits what can go where. And late game, it's not certainly not as good as it is late game. Late game, it's really obnoxious. And then the other gentleman, he's got the reform, which is absolutely fantastic on a Warcaster unit or Warlock unit.
Plus he got that knockdown gun.
And plus he's got the snare gun. And Rat 6 on both of them is pretty fantastic. So they're very serviceable. I've done a lot of damage with both of them. And, you know, with that feat standing still, like you get that Rat 10 knockdown gun, someone who's running something that is high defense, that's their strength, they're gonna feel really sad.
Whoop, Kaya's down the ground. Goodbye.
And when you have Grimm, he can, with the unit, you can cast spells, then use those guys, and then use Grimm to shoot. So you could mortality, knockdown gun, shoot. In that order, which is a really fun and flexible way to play the unit as well.
Yeah, I think you called it and you said, this guy's a one-trick pony, but that trick is really impressive.
It is impressive, and it is good, and I think that's what settles him there in the middle tier. I'm not too sure that trolls have had too much trouble with the people who do spam the tough to make it that mortality anti-tough tech. If it worked on Errants, it'd be fantastic, but
hey,
it
man,
doesn't.
It works on the Harbinger. She can't murder for anything that you, mortality. That's the thing.
True, but what are you mortality-ing in your generic Harbinger army? Not the Errants, because they're spell warded. So, they're still gonna be the tough front line. They're still gonna get mortalityed. Or they're still not gonna get mortalityed, so they're still gonna be annoying. You could maybe tag a choir unit and maybe snipe out all their choir, which would be obnoxious. But, you know, it also is just fantastic on their warjacks, you know, dropping their armor low and then just pummeling them with bombs. I once mortality'd a protectorate battle engine and a slag troll while rolling high did solo it with the 3 dice damage or the additional die damage because it's a construct.
That's impressive. I've seen it used on, their cavalry. Brian likes to play that shit and, also on their bastion units. Yes. Which is both just great things.
I guess with Brian in your meta, he does bring that really strong melee Harbinger, and those units certainly don't like it.
I will refrain from ranting about Brian in my meta, because that could go on for a while. Funny point, this guy has takedown in his melee attacks, like he's ever going to make them, but, you know, it's cool to have, I guess.
Well, actually, it's funny you say that. This list with the double bushwhackers actually has an end game with Grimm in melee. because they're a unit, you can use the Chronicler to give them feign death and concealment, which defense 18 from shooting is really fantastic. Alternatively, though, the Chronicler does have the troll gang that he can put on a unit, which they are as well. So if I run a beast into melee with whatever I want to kill, and then I very simply, I mean, this is not a difficult combination. It's going to sound like a lot of moving parts, but it's easy. Chronicler buffer +2/+2, rage on Grimm. And then and this one list, I am using a stone with him, so it's not as run and gun as normal. But you toss the stone on him, so you're getting +4 strength, plus another 2 from the troll gang, and you can fell call him up to a mat 10
pow 18. 18. Holy shit.
So I have diluted a stalker once with his melee weapon.
Damn, son.
And if you upkeep Mirage on yourself, which isn't a terrible idea, you have 11.5-inch threat, which the other person has to respect. And if they don't know that that's coming, they might laugh as they kind of get close to Grimm, thinking that they might just be able to shoot him. And
Grimm
then Church
is
head
grail,
off.
Huh? Good luck.
Whap! Oh, no.
Yeah, that's pretty good shit.
It is really funny. When I first thought of it, I thought of it stupidly. I was like, this is actually legitimate. I was like, I was wondering if I could build a list using all those components that could be effective. And so far, I actually have been able to, so.
It's not like you're hating anything. Oh no, I have to take stones. Darn it, Chronicler.
Yeah. Maybe the Mauler would be the only questionable piece, but even then, I think that's a fantastic war beast. With the rise of the Colossals, my Earthborn has been getting less and less play because he can't kill Colossals. Because he doesn't really steal a very valuable power from them, and trolls don't bring along a lot of valuable power to sit next to my Earthborn. So by bringing the Mauler, juicing him up to 19, he can actually threaten a Colossal at any given moment.
I never really given any thought to how trolls would attack Colossals, but it makes sense to me that a Mauler, especially in an army with mortality, would just fucking rend one.
Yes, he will. Yeah, he'll solo one by himself if you... Mortality, like, and another thing that's great with the Chronic, or the Rune Bearer is that once per game mini feat, sure it's only magic score 6, but when you're dealing with a Colossal, he moves up, mortalities it himself. Grimm now has a whole boatload of fury to play with. He can then rage the Mauler and send him in and he'll destroy it.
Makes sense to me. Alright, so let's move on. The next thing we got here is this Night Troll.
Man, this was a model I was excited about, and to be honest, I was let down.
So, Night Trolls, how many of your lists would you put a Night Troll in? You know, given 12 50-point steamroller lists, you're playing the devil for your soul, you know, you have to win. How many Night Trolls are we going to see?
Probably zero.
Zero Night Trolls.
Zero Night Trolls. Yeah, I've thought, and you know, like I said, I mean, people have coined me as the guy who wants to be inventive and wants to play things that are quote unquote bad. But when I make lists, I just like to look at things. I know you're the same way, Walter.
Thanks.
You figure out, this is just good. It might be weird and different, but this is just actually good. And it's better than my other options. And because of that, I'm bringing this, and this is why it works. The Night Troll, I can't figure that out. Allure seems fantastic, but with living models being the thing, he's not sturdy enough to use Beguile and be scary. The Avatar, when he gazes, you're like, damn it, there's an armor, you know, there's a defense 10, armor 21, maybe he's Defender's Warded guy who says, I must come attack him. That
sounds
terrible.
And I'm enlivened.
Exactly, and he's enlivened. Here, I've got a defense 12, armor 15 chump that a heavy can scrap in like three blows. So Beguile, while it might pull aggro, I'm not sure that he's fitting in my already expensive battle group, because I play trolls, and trolls battle groups are generally expensive, to even have a few pieces.
How many points would you say you usually spend on a battle group?
It's not that I spend a lot on it, it's that I have to spend a lot on each beast, because I don't have, you know, I have two 4-point lights now with the Night Troll. So, the Swamp Troll and Night Troll. I like the Swamp Troll. The Night Troll, he is not that. It's nice that he's cheap, but I don't think he's off. He has stealth, he has eyeless sight and no ranged weapons and no Pathfinder.
Okay. But he has stealth.
He does have stealth. I mean, I will be honest, I haven't tested him, much at all. I've only played him once, against living warrior models. But
okay, yeah, true.
He doesn't need to be cleaning up warrior models. I see him as an anti-beast tech, quote unquote, charge him at a Warp Wolf, boost the hit, now you're paralysis, then I send in my Mauler, don't have to worry about hitting problems, finish him off. He's a nice 1-2 punch. I'll take back the zero. I'll say 1 out of 12, because I feel like I could figure out something cool to do with him. He's just not quite there.
Yeah, I mean, it looks to me like the design for this guy is he goes up and he sings to an enemy piece that's like a 9 or a 10 point beast, and then they kill him, and then you kill them, and you've traded a 4-pointer for a 10-pointer.
Correct, and remember, anything with purification, yep. anything with any kind of dispel, you can get rid of that Beguile, and now you're safe. Or, you can just kill him with infantry, because he's a 12-15 beast. So, it's not like if he was a lot harder to kill, like if this guy had stone form, that would be freaking sweet. But he doesn't have stone form, so he's just going to die to Steelhead Halberdiers.
Or, you know, 8 inches of range. I mean, the Avatar gets a lot of mileage out of, I'm gazing at you and there's paladins between us. You know,
exactly.
5 inches is really a little fucking rough.
That's true. The one thing that is nice is that it does not require line of sight with like the Avatar does.
True.
So you could, you know, let's say they have a something that they would want to run away. You could cover him in champions and kind of be like, you can't kill the champions, so you're gonna have to charge them. You can't go further away. You can't go over to this flag, you know, keeping someone away. There are some uses for this. I also kind of like the idea of Borka casting it and like moving up and being like, deal with me.
You better kill me, but you can't.
Exactly. So there are certainly some interesting things. He's an unfortunate miss, I believe, but you know, I think we're still in the first impressions phase. The model's not out. I don't do too much proxying.
Mm-hmm.
So when he comes out, I promise I'll give him his due. And if I do find something else, Walter, I'll make sure to report back to you. But right now, 1 out of 12 at best.
Okay. I'm, you know, in a sort of a sop to my great love for the company, I'll say his model looks fantastic.
It's fantastic. In design, he seems cool. Stealth, paralysis, like, those are great, those are two great abilities. Just the whole rest of his kit isn't working out. If he maybe had a little more power, or like plus one strength, he does have the Wicked Claws, if you notice, which has plus one power over the, regular claws.
Yeah, 3-pointers.
So, but it still only gets him up to a 12. So, he's still hitting as hard as a Pyro Troll does, because the Pyro Troll is strength 9, I believe. I could be wrong, but I think he's hitting as hard as a Pyro is. The Swamp Troll is strength 8, and so he only hits a power 11, but this guy does have Wicked Claws, giving him power 12s. It's not like enough to be like, oh man, if I rage that guy and stone him, if he got to 17, it's just that much more for me to be like, okay, more use, but right now I don't see it.
It's important to, every once in a while I'm always reminded of how different our factions are. In Circle, if you're at a 12, I'm like, okay, then you're a 12. I mean, you can be primaled, but.
Correct. Yeah, we don't have, that's the thing. Like, I like the lights that can do work. I've recently just been falling in love with the Slag Troll every time I play him because he's got Pal 13 fists. He's strength 10.
Weapon master, right?
Yeah, I mean, no, unfortunately only on the range attacks.
Oh.
If he did that, I think you'd see a lot more of those guys. But still, with his own Animus on him, you know, he's very self-sufficient. He can punch things. He's mat 6, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
He can do work. But this guy, he's just falling a little bit short. If he had, you know, a ranged paralysis, or if he had a ranged weapon at all with, to actually utilize the Eyeless Sight,
sure,
I'd probably be in a little more love. But he's just falling short. He is, yeah, beautiful, though.
I mean, you gotta imagine some poor dude, they're like, we need another troll light, and he's like, the design space is full, what do you want? They've got all the, I mean, okay, it controls enemy models' movement, they're like, it can't be too good, it's just a 4-point light. He's like, badly, it does that badly.
Yeah, I would honestly say that even if he had aggressive instead of man-eater, that would be sweet because he would run and charge for free, which in trolls with a lack of fury management, running for free is just nice.
Yeah.
I think that change honestly would put him a little higher, maybe not out of the 1-2 spot, but still giving him a little more flexibility and a little more help without making him too strong. It's that little bit of fury management that the trolls would enjoy. And that's, you know, just something that would be there for them.
Whenever I talk to, like, Watt or Neutralizer, I was like, yeah, you know, just force for this and this and this. And I'm like, first world bastards, you know. Legion and the fucking Scorn, just force everywhere, all the time, forever.
Correct. I actually have the same theory, except for I just let my stuff frenzy.
Yeah. My fury management is primal.
Exactly.
All right, so let's look at our next guy. We've got Trollkin Warders. What do you think?
Earlier I mentioned that trolls generally have expensive models and units. This is a unit that I'm not sure if it's undercosted, but it's certainly cheap. For 8 wound models, 8 points for 5 of them is fantastic. These guys naturally have armor. They don't have to play the buddy system to get it. And while they're only POW 10 weapon masters, they can get up to 12 with battle driven. And Under the Stone being a natural armor 21 after one of them is damaged, it's something that's going to be, it's going to be annoying. And these guys lend themselves to a lot of different casters that I think will really enjoy them. Regular Griselle in a certain build will enjoy them. Although right now she's being used for the anti-Krix matchup made popular by Schonkweiler. I think that Epic Griselle could also put a lot of hurt. Are a lot of original designs with Epic Griselle, or sorry, not Epic Griselle, I apologize, regular Griselle. They, you know, with that additional attack, with those additional moves, they can actually get up the field, they can maneuver around, and with 2 attacks, they're going to do a lot of damage. They're still, you know, fearless and tough. They're mat 7, which is a fantastic mat, and they've got that reach. I'm really excited to use them with regular Madrak. I think that's the one caster that's going to shine the most. And, you know, with reach and the feet, you know, a unit of 5 of them could probably kill with Carnage and Felcall at mat 11. They could probably kill unlimited amounts of models.
I mean, Carnage and Crusher, everything they reach is just going to die.
Yeah, and with a medium base and the 1-inch move and the reach, it just makes them really fantastic. I do recall 2 Kingdom Cons ago, Scaldy Bonehammer killed an entire unit of Mage Hunter Strike Force and an entire unit of Dawnguard Sentinels.
Wait, 20 models?
20 models.
Somebody 21, thinks he's slaughter
more. 22 models. And then he got to the UA, and I rolled Snake Eyes to hit him, and then I hit him again, and I didn't kill him on damage.
Weird.
It was very funny that I got all the way to the end, and I couldn't kill the UA. But it was incredible, and they have that potential, and they're just cheap. 8 points. It's amazing. They've given me a present.
I mean, 8 points for these. There's a 5-8 unit that are mat 7 reach weapon masters with cool armor and lots of hit points. I'm a little jealous, I won't lie.
Well, like, you always compare things to Gators when you're talking about medium-based infantry.
Yeah.
And Gators are absolutely fantastic, but this is in trolls who have a lot of in-faction buffs, so fantastic. You know, that's a point for the warders.
Yep.
They're 1 point cheaper. That point can go somewhere. That's nice. They're significantly slower, but in the troll faction you're playing with, you're not going to be reaching out. You know, I don't need them to be.
Yeah, the counter charge is charge.
Exactly. That's pretty much how it works for trolls. And the armor is just fantastic comparatively, especially when you consider the stone. they're going to be a nightmare for smaller arms to fight. Even beasts. I mean, I know that you play a lot of the wolds. I mean, getting a wold warden or a wold, even megalith into this unit. I mean, once you hit one, their dice, what, your dice minus five on one under the stone? That's terrible.
Megalith charges one, taps it. Other fist boosts damage. If you're lucky, you got that tough roll. You could buy an attack. He couldn't kill two of them. Buy an attack, boost damage, buy an attack. You need to get really lucky to kill two.
And for a fantastic, you know, model like Megalith is, that's just saying something. And even, you know, moving on to things that aren't, you know, Megalith. You know,
notoriously a bit pillow-fisted.
Exactly. And there's a lot, even like an Angelius, very common. You just said you saw six of them. Sure, your thrust might kill one, but then you're going to kill one. Then you got POW 14, seven off. So then that rest of that unit's got to kill that angel. That's a favorable trade in my mind.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, these guys aren't even 2 points a model. They're cheaper than Skinners.
Yep, and they'll just do the job. And I think that they've got a place. Talking about the ranking system, there are certainly troll lists that are beast heavy, so I have to take that into consideration where they probably won't see some play.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
When warrior models come to play, I think they're going to be in the top. They'll probably see at about 60 to 65% play in the warrior model list. So I'll say out of 12, 5 to 6 out of 12, which is, in my opinion, a good rating for
unit. My, if I was a designer listening to this, I'd say that I would definitely want to hear, you know, at least one or two from my model that I'd released. I would dread hearing zero, but more than that, I would dread hearing 12.
Exactly.
Like, you don't want to air and be like, okay, everyone has one from now on. You know, you've made the new, pain handlers.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think they hit the head. It was exactly what trolls wanted, something that was cheaper for them, that was still, you know, in faction with them. This adds to that brick, which is fantastic. And I think they did a good job.
Good stuff. All right. Well, let's turn the page to, speaking of good jobs, a one-pointer. Maybe the point you save from going away from Gatorman into Warders. We've got this Trollkin Sorcerer solo.
Yeah, very interesting model design. The first model to use the adjunct special rule, which allows them to essentially client without being a client. And although it does say it does say client in it, so I don't know why it wasn't the same, but I guess it's because it was a unit and they wanted to kind of bracket it for future use.
Yeah.
So, and that way you can't just choose any kind of thing. So the adjunct special rule essentially allows him to have a client, which allows him to affect him with one of the spells that he has, which removes upkeeps. So fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big deal. How many times have you seen someone be like, fear of God? You're like, oh, great.
Oh, crippling grasp.
Yeah, well, even better.
Good game,
right?
Champions.
Yeah. Arcadius laughs.
Exactly. He's, for a point, I don't think you could ask for much more. It was actually interesting that he didn't have health boxes. That was kind of the first thing I noticed, and I was kind of bummed. But after 12, understanding
14, no boxes.
But after understanding his whole package and seeing what he does, I think that he's more than acceptable. He's got a magic attack. He's got battle wizard in a faction that could buff him up. He could be triggering that pretty easily. He has Winter Storm, which is generally regarded as a wasted ability on Lannister Vassil. I think that this ability could be fantastic, and it's just that one little annoyance, especially if he makes a tough check after you, like, oh, I'll go send this guy to kill him. Oh, tough check.
Yeah, her.
Crap. Yeah. So he's got moves, you know, and I think he's good.
My favorite use I ever saw to that was there was an Angelius with admonition. This guy, or actually it was Lanissa, walked up and started singing so it couldn't fly, and then they pinned the base.
That's awesome. I think I think that Winter Storm is pretty funny when it works. It's gonna work hard.
Oh, I lied. That doesn't even work. We were cheating.
Oh.
Yeah, they have to begin their activation to lose their thing. Oops.
Okay, yeah, there you go. You're right.
Sorry, Drew.
Well, still, I mean, you could still put stuff where he wants to fly, I guess. But yes, you are right. I guess it doesn't work. That being said, it does work against Colossals.
True.
Because they have Pathfinder.
Yep.
So it's very funny when they are stuck behind a wall. And it's like, well, there's a unit of champions in front of him, so you can't see him. And you're going to have to deal with that. And that's another thing, too, I noticed. A lot of people have complained about the Throlg. And I've always been like, man, mine doesn't die that easily. And it's because I have a sea of medium bases that a solo like this or the Throlg, they are going to be able to live for longer than you would expect. So.
I mean, if you want the Throlg to take upkeeps off your own models, there's no reason it should die. You know, you can't reach out and touch a Throlg. Things have 8 hit points and arm 16.
Well, even when it's, even when, you know, I want it to be offensive, like, it gets to move up the field with a sea of medium bases. So it's not like sticking out like a sore thumb, like when he's hanging out with a bunch of blood trackers.
Yeah, like, surrounded by druids. He's like, guys?
Exactly. So I think that, you know, that leads to the sorcerer being, survivable. To go again with a rating, he does only work on units, so we're gonna take like half of our builds out, I think. So I think once again, you're gonna see like a 4 or 5 for this model, and I think that that's pretty good. I mean, that would mean that he would probably make it into one of my two Steamroller lists most of the time.
I'd be impressed if he could get a 5. I mean, a lot of units that, even the ones that do use units may not have that extra point, or they may want to use it to turn some beast into Mulg or something, but.
Correct, but on the other note, you may just stick him in a list for a point.
True,
he may be that guy. I like the feral guys because he's incorporeal, but maybe I feel like I need that magic attack, so I'll toss in a sorcerer.
Don't mention feral guys to me. I lost a damn game because of one of those stupid things. It possessed a mountain king and clobbered megalith.
Can you do that? I thought you couldn't gain control of gargantuans.
Apparently, you can control your own gargantuan, but not the enemies.
Interesting. Very cool. Well, not cool, I guess, but...
Well, depending on... It's a cool that it can work, but not with my gargantuan because it's old.
That's true.
So our next guy is a Trollkin solo, the Fenblade Kithkar.
This is, I think, what trolls have wanted for a really long time, and I think he ends up being the best entry in the book for us, only because he's a two-point dude who kills stuff, and that is great. You know, we got the Skinner... And he is not very fantastic, although I have used him competitively, and he was amazing. So I can't rag on him too much, but he was pretty much a niche, very specific design. He does not make it regularly. He's not someone I could just toss in and feel good about. This is a Command 9 commander, which is fantastic. Instead of having to spend 3 for the champion hero, I can spend 2. Yeah, sure, I lose one command, but my burrowers are still pretty happy at Command 9. And he's now.
That's true. Roll that 10, man. You know it.
He's fantastic. He does a lot of work with Righteous Vengeance.
Hello? You still here, man? Hello, hello?
He has a humongous threat range. I was just thinking about all the different cool lists you could put him in to.
You're fading in and out on me, man. Let's see if that goes away again, if maybe I can... Hello? Alright, we're trying to reconnect here, listeners. Hello?
Hey.
Sorry about that, the call faded in and out.
Yeah, it died. Okay. Do you just want to start again with the Fenblade Kithkar?
More about the Kithkar, I don't really do any editing, just keep going.
You don't edit?
Nope.
So you won't cut it, like if I just start again with the Fenblade Kithkar?
I suppose I could be persuaded to, but more likely I'd just leave it in.
And Jason died. Oh, he's back.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it is. There was an earlier thing where I encouraged the guest to continue talking while I used the bathroom.
That's okay. So Fenblade Kithkar, you know, like I said, he's got the fantastic command stat for your cheaper troops at only 2 points. It's really helpful. He has a potential assassination whenever he wants with a Felkar getting up to mat 9 and then a slew of troll buffs that can really send him up there. He has 2 base POW 13 attacks. Felcom up to mat 9, give him rage and weapon master with epic madrak. You've got a guy who has a 17 inch threat range with pretty much no work put into it, who's a mat 9 POW 16 weapon master with 2 attacks. I think it sounds good.
Yeah. I mean, that's greater. That's like feeding on Doom Reavers, you know, I mean, with Epic Lad.
Yeah, it is. It literally is. He's got Unyielding, which makes him a little tanky. He's a little on the light side because he is a Fenblade, 12-15. But you get him under stone. With that, 12-19, he's going to shrug off infantry. He also has 8 boxes for 2 points.
That's nice.
It's pretty invaluable, you know, shoving him in the back of his zone. You can't just, you know, use your little POW 10s to take him out. You have to actually dedicate something a little more serious. And I think he just has a lot of moves. Tactician Fenblade, always useful. When you have a slew of medium bases, being able to move through them is always nice.
Especially when the front line get knocked down, you can vengeance kind of past them, maybe not directly through them, but, you know, just over the corners of them.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the guy kind of speaks for himself. He's just a 2-point badass solo. And once again, also speed 6, which is the Fenblade speed, but it's fantastic to have on a solo for trolls because, you know, we need that speed whenever we can ask for it. Speed 6 with reach.
Yeah.
You're going to see this guy around. I think that this is probably the first one we're going to say as a 6, maybe a 7 even.
I can buy
just
that.
Just as a throw-in solo.
No, yeah, totally. I mean, he's excellent. I'm envious.
And the model is very nice as well. I saw a picture from it from Wakamote. It looks very nice.
Yeah, he looks cool, man. There was also a sort of an unidentified troll solo looking dude with a warjack arm on his back.
Yeah, probably a mercenary. So I think that guy looks pretty sweet.
The painter was saying Bloodlaw was that guy, but we don't know anything about it yet.
Very cool. But yeah, all around this guy just kind of, he just fills the 2-point niche warrior model role that trolls have always wanted. So
yeah.
We've got it, we're happy about it, and I think no one can complain about him.
All right, well let me hear your thoughts on the Mountain King.
The Mountain King. Walter, you know that I like the Mountain King.
I've heard that you've used it.
I have.
I've seen you use it.
I've tried to punch a Harbinger in the face with it once, if you recall.
I've heard that story from the other side a couple times.
The Mountain King. On one side, he's a travesty, and on the other side, he's unkillable demon. I'll start with the travesty side. He's the only colossal or gargantuan that has Mat 5, and I don't think that there's a reason to justify it. And it's kind of sad, and it's unfortunate, and it's funny that that was the difference between me winning that, that Gen Con and not.
Yeah.
So it hurts, especially now after that. It hurts a little bit. We do have a couple of ways to buff Beast Mat, but not as many as we would like. So I think that Mat 5 is going to hold him down for all time. Additionally, his range attack is fantastic because it is a spray, which is nice because when you have a lower rat, having the spray ignore all those cool, those buffs that, you know, you can gain naturally from the game. That's really great. Pow 16, it's nice. I wish he could do it more than once per turn.
Well, more than once per turn, 10-inch spray would be that's like, you know.
What? It's like asking for like a Stormwall who can shoot a billion times or a Galleon who can shoot a billion times.
I was going to twist the knife and say Convergence Battle Engine, which is half the points.
Sure, yeah. But I mean, like, sure, the Mammoth is Rat 3, but he's packing some really serious heat that doesn't even require hitting to clear infantry models, so I don't think that being able to do 2-in-1 would be too much to ask. If it had rate of fire 2, I think that'd be sweet. It doesn't. That's okay, too. It is still spray 10, so it's rather short range, but power 16 is nice. With knockdown, you can do some pretty serious stuff.
You got to say it's nice that he can shoot while he melees. That's kind of cool.
Only against living models, but yes, he can. He can, with kill shot, it is only triggered on living models, but it is nice. I have face tanked entire armies with him. And with that sweep and spray combination, you could clear a lot of models.
Mm-hmm.
And with something like Fortune or Calamity unit or Mortality unit around, he can do a lot of work.
And, I mean, if he dies, you still have, like, 9 or 10 whelps to go run over to your other trolls.
That's true. So to continue talking about the travesty portion, he does have a rather low health spiral. Comparatively, only 2 more than an Archangel. For a troll that's supposed to be – for the trolls who are supposed to be the meaty – kind of faction, maybe a little less than Titans, but not too much less than Titans. That's kind of disappointing myself. I guess also wolves also hold the candle for the highest meat. But generally, trolls have a lot of health. And this guy doesn't even have 50. He has 48. I think 50 would have been better, maybe even 52. But 50 will at least put him into a not such a depressing state. He's not a flying, ride-by-attacking speed 6 guy. You know, he doesn't even have the mat to necessarily kill what he's in melee with. So you'd hope that the stalwartness of the Mountain King would be there. It's just a little low for my liking. However, that are amazing about the Mountain King, there are situations where he is the hardest to kill model in the game. He cannot be nickeled and dimed. He repairs himself with whelps nearly automatically. I have threshered and killed 8 guys and eaten 7 whelps to heal 15 D3 in a turn. The guy sometimes is just an absolute terror, and he's unstoppable, and for that reason, I very much enjoy him. Yes, it is very possible for people to one round him with 1 to 2 beasts that are kind of buffed up, but if you don't have that and you're not able to get the beasts where they need to be, this guy is an absolute terror. Speaking of which, he has terror, which I also think is fantastic, because you charge him with that unit, and if they fail that check, They're not doing any damage to him. They're in the way. He's eating them. It's yeah, just, it's just a disaster. So, you know, whelp shedding, if you're not familiar, every single time he takes damage from enemy attack, except for during his activation, he gets to put a whelp in base-to-base contact. This also is helping to justify his 20-point cost, which all gargantuans have, because he's constantly living, and when he does die, like you said, you've got an army of whelps behind him, and he's just kind of a terror to deal with in certain situations. He's armor 19 base, you're probably going to have a stone, so he's at least 21, which puts him up there. And if you have an Earthborn Animus around to toss on him, up to 23. And then there's other ways to get him even higher, maybe Epic Rassel's feet. This guy can hold his ground. And like I said, if he's able to hold the line, he'll be there forever. And that's what I like about him.
Well, that's fair enough. An impassioned defense combined with the scolding of a disappointed parent for the Mountain King. Would you say one list, probably?
I would say one, maybe even two. The thing is this though, he does get it done. Like when the list is made around him, I think he's actually more playable than a lot of the other gargantuans, which is kind of impressive.
So let me recite something for you that I did on my circle part and see if you agree with it. I feel like in terms of just dropping a gargantuan into the list, the best one is the Mammoth, the second best one is the Angelius, the third best one is the Woldrath, the fourth best one is the Mountain King. Okay. By contrast, making it the centerpiece of your list, I think the best one is the Mammoth, the second best one is the Mountain King, the third best one is the Woldrath, the fourth best one is the Archangel.
Yeah, that's probably true. And I think that the Mountain King even can contest the Mammoth. There aren't very many, like, you don't look and you're like, oh, Mammoth list. Like, maybe Morgul, maybe Rasheth. But it's not, like, really shining. But when you've got, you know, this Mountain King, the one cool thing about him is with Fury 5, he and the Mammoth, they are going to be getting the most attacks. They can do tons of damage. And with Trolls, you're going to have those in-faction buffs to make him even stronger. At least Pow 20 with the Stone UA.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to be scrapping other Colossals. You know, at the time of his release, we did not know what the Mammoth did. And I said this a million times. I said, while he might be the worst gargantuan / colossal at this moment, he is the only one that can reliably kill the other ones. And I think that has a candle in this meta that's constantly tossing a colossal out there here and now. You can't let him get to you. And he has speed 5, which in trolls, you know, it's most likely you might find a 7 if you got rush. And then from there, you know, E-Doom Shaper's feet.
Yep.
Or Doomshaper 2's feet, I should say. You know, he can get there, so.
I could totally see Epic Doomshaper with this guy. That's actually what beat me at, Lock and Load.
Yeah, and it's, you know, giving him all boosted attack rolls sounds good.
Yep. He, just boosts everything, charges forward for free, devours whatever he sees.
Yeah, and he does work, and I, like I said, I want to like him more. I don't think Mat 6 makes him broken. I think that's really big Achilles heel. He just can't stand ground against defense, you know,
12.
13. Defense 12, but I was going to say 13. But yeah, defense 12 is just, it's really difficult to hit, and there are certainly some good ways to handle it, and with his high fury stat, you can do a boosted headbutt into three more attacks, which will kill many heavies, especially with a buff of some sort on him.
Yep.
So there is that. Another thing I like doing is spawning the whelp, running the whelp up to their caster, slamming the whelp into the caster, and then just eating them with the Mountain King, which is pretty fantastic as well.
Let's see. We got some new minion releases that work for Trollbloods this cycle. Would you ever consider Midas for a second caster in a two-caster game?
I'd say probably not. While Calamity is really great, and Blood and Battlelust, I'm actually checking to see if that is faction.
It's unfortunately faction.
So yeah, so you're not really going to get anything out of that with Midas. Calamity's already in faction. None of his abilities really affect what we can do. So I doubt that would be something that I would like. Hexblast is always good, and Bad Blood's a fantastic spell. But it just seems to be he'd probably fall a little short in the combination realm. Okay. I don't think he's really helping us do something that another Trollcaster wouldn't do better at.
Yeah, he's more looking for help from you. Correct. By contrast, what about this next guy? You think Rask might be a good second Warcaster?
Yeah, I think that Rask he's obviously fantastic. His feet,
if you say really, no, you're lying.
His feet is fantastic. Inhospitable Ground obviously helps everyone. Fury is friendly model, so you can
has Iris's gun?
He has Iris's freaking gun, and he has everyone's gun. He's got fantastic guns.
Yeah.
And the harpoon doesn't even look special. Like, it's not even...
He's just got
like
this harpoon gun.
It's not even glowing.
It's the best magic weapon in the damn game between paralysis and arcane interference. And, you know, he looks like he picked it up off the ground in his fishing shack.
Yeah, exactly. Paralysis is just insane endgame. You know, helping that Mountain King hit his mat 5, only needing not snakes. So I think that he would be a pretty good second caster. Like I said, with Fury and Rage, you could make a Troll War Beast plus 7, including the stone, with pretty much point and click. So I think that, yeah, when you send in, like, your Blitzer and he kills your Colossal, you'll be sad.
Yeah, he's like, Boundless Charge, Fury, and whatever the fuck. Good luck.
Yeah, so I think that he would be suitable.
Okay. The Raids of War not really making an impact now that Goblin Tinker. What about the Gator and Boker and Bogtrog Swamp Shamblers? You feeling any of that?
I see them used more effectively in lots of factions. That being said, I could see a swarm army with a very strong troll attrition behind it. And, you know, there are certain ways to make him work. If I'm not mistaken, Blood Fury will work on him from Epic Madrak. I'm actually double checking that as we speak. Okay. And if that's the case, you're turning him into a tons of attacks, Pal 12 Weapon Master. That seems pretty good. So I think that there are some abilities that are nice for him. That being said,
he can stationary things that are immune to cold. He's pretty much the only person that can do that.
There you go. That is true. I didn't even think about that. He seems to be a really well-rounded piece. If you've ever played against Alexia, you know how annoying it is to just grow back more guys. And these guys are better than Risen that are coming back. So you're gonna find that this guy is rather obnoxious. So I think that he has a place in most armies, just as a cheap filler to kind of like flood the board and like control pieces movement or the movement of pieces. That being said, there's nothing that really stands out. For example, like a last standed one that Zal can bring. I can't wait to see someone do that. Explode target model. But he's pretty fantastic.
Well, fair enough. You got anything else, just generally trollish that you've been doing lately? Any lists you're working on that you want to tell the internet about or, you know, combos that you've tried?
Nope. I wish I could say that I've been doing more, but I haven't been doing a lot of playing. We recently ran Store Wars in Pasadena, California, and that's been pretty fantastic. That was really fantastic. Actually, I didn't even get to play, and my guys were played well enough and did well enough to take it home to Arizona for Empire Games. So
hey,
Imperial Outpost Games, and we were very happy to do that, and I was happy to represent them.
I think I ran into your damn trolls at DICON. Like, you weren't there, but somebody was borrowing your stuff? Is that true?
No one was borrowing my stuff there.
Lie. I'm a crazy person. I thought somebody had their army and they were like, this is Flanzer's army. But I guess they meant they had copied your list. I thought they meant, I am borrowing Flanzer's army.
No, not the time. Oh, by the way, Blood Fury does work on them, so that's pretty fantastic.
That's interesting.
But yeah, I mean, troll things, you know, I've been slowly practicing, what I've been working on for a really long time, and I've recently been dabbling in mercs, so you know, I've been finding some pretty fun lists to play in mercs. So
where's the killer app for those new merc journeymen that you think of? This is, I guess, outside the Trollbloods remit, but I can't help myself. Let's hear it.
Gaston. I mean, I like that his name is Gaston. sorry, I think Beauty and the Beast is awesome.
True.
He's, you know, this guy's just a rockin' hand cannon. I don't see myself bringing any jacks on him. I think he's just sweet as a solo. I think he might be one of the best solos out of all the whole group. You know, for 3 points, he has a rate of fire 2 hand cannon that he can boost both shots. Seems pretty fantastic.
And he could totally take a cheap, what's it called, shield guard jack.
He could, a Vanguard. Yep, 4-point Vanguard, which is fantastic as well, yeah.
If you can assemble the stupid thing.
It is impossible. It also looks like it's sitting in a chair.
Yeah. But they're good jacks. I mean, and for 4 points, it's a steal.
Indeed.
Especially if the thing is refuging when it shoots people. Or not refuging, but run and gunning.
Yep. I do agree. Yeah, he's a fantastic piece, and I'm pretty excited to see how the Journeymans affect the game as a whole.
So you're going to the WTC, right?
I am going to WTC, yep.
All right. Are you in the same team as Brian or in the other team?
I am, yeah. Brian, Will Pagani, Jake Van Meter, myself, and Danny Modesto are on one team. So we're really excited to get over there and show what we got.
Okay. I just want you to know I'm not one of those guys who's for, you know, international cooperation. I want to see a Roman triumph. I mean, I want to see a slaughter. I want
America versus America in the finals, America versus two
in the finals, with having lost nothing. Just leave them in ruins, man.
That would be ideal and awesome.
This nation is War Machine's homeland, and it's only right that we should be the champions. So just go over there and crush them.
It's true. It's true. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, plus, if you guys don't do that, I will make the plan that it was because I wasn't there. So, yeah, I really win either way.
Indeed.
Great. Well, thanks for being on the talk show, man. I will post this up probably later on tonight.
Excellent. I appreciate it.
All right,
man. You have a great night.
I'm going to stop recording.
See ya.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the increasingly misnamed Team ATL podcast. This time I've got Chad here to talk about the Trollbloods releases from the Gargantuans book.
Hi.
How have things been lately, Chad?
Pretty good.
What do you think overall? I mean, obviously only half of the stuff roughly has been released, but do you feel that the Gargantuans contributions that have been made to the Trollbloods are equal or exceed those of the other factions? Do you guys think that you guys might have won this book, or might have someone else?
I mean, I'm generally extremely happy with a lot of the Trollblood releases. It was one of those, it was an interesting sort of thing, where the day that the spoilers came out, everyone was super mopey on all of the Troll releases, and just, you know, the forums were woe and misery. And then I even got in on a little bit of that, but as you know, we thought about it more, as you put more thought into it, it was like, actually, these are really good models, so I'm sorry, one second.
Yeah, no problem.
I have to do this over again.
There's certainly something to be said for the models that the Trolls got in this release. They're definitely very distinct from previous releases, I feel. In particular, Epic Grimm is just a weird, weird warlock. I mean, what's up with him having three bodies? You know, he's got his minion buddies. That's just crazy. He's a unit.
Yeah, it's awesome. I've played him a couple times now, and it's funny how much all three of those models matter to the list.
Huh.
Because the knockdown gun, being able to, I kind of lamented the fact that they put it on a different model because now it's not, you're not able to boost it.
That's true.
And that was sort of a core component to the Prime Grim playstyle.
You can easily replace that by just having the trap model lay the trap down and then having a war beast push the enemy model into the trap, thereby knocking him down. You don't even have to roll the hit to do that.
That's true. That's
every word was true.
That's protest.
Grossly misleading.
No, the big thing about the way that they design their epic warlocks is that they want a different kind of playstyle. If Grimm had the knockdown gun on him, you know, it'd be a very similar playstyle because you'd have, you know, your choice between am I gonna shoot my gun or am I gonna shoot my rifle or am I gonna shoot my snare gun.
I feel like with Mortality, he's always going to have a different playstyle from the other one. I mean, especially also he's got no defensive feat. Instead, his feat is offensive. You know, that's a big difference.
Yeah, that is a big difference. But I mean, just in general, the ability to knock things down at range is so extremely powerful. It can be model defining, it can be caster defining. So he's still got that, but without being able to boost, it loses a lot of its oomph on, you know, the really, really important targets, like casters and things like that.
It's got that familiar paradox. Anything you can hit with this gun, do you really need to knock it down?
Well, but that's the thing is, a lot of the times, yes, because it's still a Rat 6 gun. It can be, boosted up slightly with his feet and with aiming and things like that. And you get to do it for free, basically.
True.
Because it's on a different model now. So it's not really, he's not really paying anything for it. He's not making a decision. You know, you get to do it every single turn, so you might as well. That's actually been a lot, less of an issue than I thought it would be because, the way it generally works out, it'll be like, okay, well, my bomber, which I like taking with him, wants to really throw a bomb at, you know, a heavy war beast or a heavy war deck or something this turn.
Do you oftentimes take
five.
One bomber or two bombers with him?
I actually have a list for him that I've been running that has two bombers. So, but I mean, the point of the thing is that, you know, bombers really hate throwing at anything that's not knocked down.
Okay, yeah.
So you get a free chance right now to just try and knock something down, which is pretty sweet.
Yeah, the circle, heavy, anti-heavy shooting war beasts don't have that problem because they're imaginary.
you got the pure blooded?
Oh, fuck. One POW 14 instead of two POW 16. Yeah. Well, no, pure bloods have their own uses and they're very, good for those uses, but they are not an anti-heavy shooting beast by any real stretch of the imagination.
Sure. I agree. It's the rate of fire too that really puts the bomber up into the stratosphere.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, he also, I love that he can shoot at infantry because of his huge blasts.
Mm-hmm.
Unless all those infantry are Karax, in which case they're girded and it's just helpless.
I can tell you the number of times I've seen Karax.
you're
of Mark II.
You're like, oh no, Karax spam coming at me. And what if they went buddy system with immortals, thereby giving every one of them girded?
That's a disaster, I guess.
I mean, run by Zal, they could hit hard. It's basically over.
Anti-bomber tech. You heard it here.
I do occasionally get some use against bombers out of the fact that all the druids can hug the Ramhands guy, the Wold Guardian. But then, you know, you're all surrounding him and he wants to fight and they also want to go after him. So it can be tough.
Yeah, yeah. Does he always have stone skin or flesh of clay or whatever it's called?
No, flesh of clay he has to animus. Girded is always though.
Right.
So if you miss, you can't just boost the blast damage on him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you miss his death 9.
Yep. Sounds good.
Do you often find yourself casting mortality? I mean, mostly that seems to be the faction defining spell. The caster defining spell for Epic Jarl.
Epic Grim. Yeah, I mean, that is absolutely his signature spell. It definitely is his caster's finding ability, even more so than having these two random pigs following him around. The way that I've noticed his playstyle panning out is that he's, because of that spell, because it's so good, he's actually one of the more fury, starved casters that we have.
Yeah, I often see him at one fury or two.
Yep. Because he's got to upkeep. Usually he upkeeps Mirage, which mm-hmm. is a fantastic spell. And then if he wants to boost to hit a gunshot or boost damage on a gunshot, and then cast Mortality and boost to hit, like that's pretty much all of it. I've found that it's pretty difficult to run the Creel Stone with him because Mortality is so good.
Yeah.
Cast it every turn. It makes it really hard to find any.
Yeah, if you do not go first, I have difficulty, you know, maybe bottom one you fill the Creel Stone. Just hope they can't reach out and touch you.
Well, and Mirage is a pretty expensive spell.
Yeah,
so
it does cost 3.
This might actually be one of those warlocks that if I did take the Creel Stone with him, like a Prime Madrak, rather than using the Rune Bearer with him to wait for late game and hot swap a spell. I might even just use it on turn one to get the
just throw it out there. But it's really tempting to have that guy throwing out mortality later.
The Rune Bearer?
Yeah.
It is, I guess. It kind of depends on the situation. If I'm going against a high armor, low defense list, then I might save it on the Rune Bearer. But otherwise I'd probably think about using that. That's only for lists that have the Creel Stone in it, which I've actually tried to get away from now the more I've played it because it's just so.
Do you usually for Steamroller try and take one Creel Stone, one non Creel Stone, or is it more
Well, usually I try and fit the Creel Stone. This is just me. I try and fit the Creel Stone into every list that I can possibly take.
I'm jealous. You know, I like to armor tank and circle. We don't have that shit.
Yeah. And even beyond its ability to just boost up the armor, like all of its additional effects that it does, it's a complete answer piece. Mm-hmm. And it's also some of the cheapest bodies and trolls that still are POW 12 when they need to be. So,
yeah, cause you can stone them themselves, and you could also, mm-hmm. What's it called?
Spell call?
Yep.
Yeah.
You guys even have those buffs, you know, chroniclers could sing at them or whatever.
One of the best answers in our faction is Spirit Chaser, just because, you know, it gets rid of incorporeal in a large radius and also gets rid of stealth in a large radius. And I've played 1,000 games that little Creel Stone has pulled me out of the fire because someone's got some stealth model somewhere where I don't want it to be. And I just sacrifice that guy for one turn, have him run out, chase away the stealth, and then kill it, you know, kill Tartarus or kill.
Yeah. I see you, you son of a bitch. Boom. Shouldn't have betrayed us and gone to Crix.
Exactly. So.
Tartarus.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the way that I do it. Like, a lot of people don't, you know, think that the Creel Stone is kind of an anchor for the troll faction because it's the most expensive support in the game. But I try and fit it in anywhere possible.
Trolls have done all right lately. I mean, I've definitely seen you guys at the bunch of top tables. So whatever you're doing, it does seem to be working. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Is there anything else that you would say about Epic Grimm? I mean, we've talked about how he's somewhat focused starved. We talked about how you like to fit in two bombers with him. Is there anything else that he would take that you just, you know, seems to be idiosyncratic to him? I've heard other people say that he likes the scatter gunners because he can increase their accuracy.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. He and scatter gunners are BFFs. My list that I have currently has scatter gunners and burrowers actually, and the that might be too much. I'd probably go with one or the other. But I'm a fan of scatter gunners with him right now. The combination of his feet and mortality and then putting mirage on them.
Mm-hmm.
Either get them a pseudo speed 8 sort of, or to disengage them when people run up to engage them. It's incredible. It's fantastic.
Yeah. It does seem like that is when you got to do it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You can't engage guys like that. I mean, that clear just lets them do whatever the hell they want.
Right. And then, there's nothing worse than having, it's happened to me in a couple of games now where people have run up to try and get and engage the scatter gunners that have mirage on them. It's a complete folly.
Yeah, you lose those models to no effect.
Right. All that you get out of it is just that the scatter gunners don't move forward that turn, but they still get to kill an entire unit easily.
You stop them from miraging forward. They can mirage backward, someone else can clear it, and they can go forward, but they will be unable to mirage forward if you physically fill the space.
Exactly. The way I've been describing his feet, people don't like his feet, because it's just not as good as Grim 1's feet. We'll just say that, I guess.
I have the opinion that defensive feats are, on the whole, better than offensive feats, and of offensive feats, the best kind are those that either deal the damage themselves or increase damage. Increasing accuracy is low on pretty much everyone's list.
Yeah. There's definitely a debate to be had about defensive versus offensive feats. But when you just look at the hard numbers, his feat is the only thing that Grim 2's feat has over Grim 1's feat is a larger area of effect.
Yeah.
Because it affects friendly models and then models within a certain, within 5 inches of friendly models, you know, essentially get marked by the feat.
Yeah.
Rather than just enemy models within 12 of them. So that's a significantly larger range, but just the actual numbers effect is unarguably less good. Plus 2 to hit versus minus 3 defense, and then it does absolutely nothing for stopping them on their turn. It's, you know, it doesn't have any control aspect to it.
You can easily imagine that the pro Grim party at wherever such things are decided was like, all right, he gets this awesome doom spell, he gets mortality, and you know, drums rolled and stuff. And the other guys were like, okay, but we're nerfing his feet, and they were like, what? Come on, man! But they couldn't really, you know, fight that one out. I mean, his feat is now an accuracy buff, and it's a snipe buff on a faction where the guys that needed the snipe could already get it. And, you know, that is what it is, and it's best, of course, on guys where you're making a bunch of attack rolls like the Scattergunners, but yeah, his feat has gone down.
Now, one snipe was actually... It's nice. It's nice to not have to cast Far Strike on a turn, and it's nice to get it on. Like, you know, there's a lot of models that you kind of want Far Strike on, but you don't really have the theory to, or you don't, you know, they're not a high priority enough model to get the Far Strike, because usually you only have one Impaler, and then your Warlock has to do other things with his Fury. So it is kind of nice to have just be like, for one turn, everything gets to shoot from far away.
Once again, I really can't emphasize, because that is a problem that both aspects of which are totally missing from Circle. I never have to think, how will I put my range buffing Animus on all of my ranged models?
Well, I'll tell you, here's an example. Like, for instance, an Impaler. For a lot of the game, the Impaler will be regulated to just casting Far Strike on a model, usually the Warlock, or like a Bomber or something like that, and then that's pretty much all he does. And once it gets into late game and things start really getting up into the mix and start getting in within his range, then he can cast Far Strike and then usually, like, throw a random spear at something that's within 8 inches of him. Which is good. When he can start doing work, like, then he can start really getting, you know, his worth back. Which is pretty much how the entire troll faction can work, you know. When they can support and also do work at the same time, that's when you're really getting the most bang for your buck.
Yeah, like
but,
the...
He, you know, for most of the game doesn't do his, he doesn't, you know, pull his weight because he's just a Far Strike bot. But that's the thing, whereas, you know, on Grim's feet, he doesn't even need to cast his Animus then, and he gets the snipe for free. So a lot of the times, you know, on Grim's feet, like, I'll be like, okay, well, my Impaler has
boosted attack at somebody.
Yeah, he has snipe, and he was going to use 2 Fury to cast Far Strike on something this turn anyway, so, you know, I might as well boost an attack and boost a damage roll on something, and that's, you know, great. And when you can get work out of everything, even like the models that you don't normally get work out of, that's pretty decent.
So yeah, Felcaller not only shouts, he also charges somebody.
Exactly. Charges somebody and then marks everyone within 5 around him.
I really do feel that Grimm has a lot of, Epic Grimm rather, has a lot of, like, little side things that aren't his main thing that are helpful. For example, he lets you have free charges against War Beasts by shooting, which is, you know, an extra pow whatever hit on it.
It changes all of the math. Free charges are a really, really big deal.
Especially if you've already just sucked up a boost at 13. His doofus with his trap, I mean, that's a really big deal. Nothing in the game can get rid of that trap. So if you drop it, all of a sudden the other player has to say, okay, look, I can't dispel this trap. It is impossible to do. I need to be steady, or I need to accept that my models may be knocked down.
I really like that you described Crump as a doofus, by the way.
You know, my theory on other players who play Circle is well known. So I feel that, you know, if I can be players, mean to them in any other context, I will.
Right. That the trap is definitely interesting because, you know, Grim 1 had such a control aspect to him, just with his feet. And Grim 2 is almost all offense, but he does still have a small amount of control with that trap. And I haven't gotten great use out of it, but there has been certain games too. I've only played probably 6 games with that Grim so far. There's been at least 2 of those games where my opponent has been pulling his hair out because of the trap. And it's kind of a funny thing because it's one of those things where if you do it well, you don't really notice it. Because no one's ever going to voluntarily walk in.
Yeah, it is a rare player who's like, all right, Bane's charge. I'm just going to lose half of them. We're doing
this. Yeah, exactly. That situation is exceedingly rare. But so, I mean, if you play it well, you're just not going to really notice the effect of it, but
But it's
definitely
so huge.
Does.
I mean, you're off in the situation, you're like, okay, Denegra's going to feat, and she's going to clear this damn zone, you know. Or, perhaps, if a light war beast goes into the zone and I put the trap on him, she may not clear it.
Right.
You know, it's possible that she has no infantry that can live in this trap.
That is the tech, is that the trap does not... the trap does not differentiate between friendly and enemy models. If you set the trap and then one of your own models walks into it, you have to take that trap down and potentially get knocked down. Now, troll stuff has high armor, and with the Creelstone, even higher armor. So a lot of the times, like, we can make it pretty unlikely for the trap to knock us down, but you're still taking that risk. Although, if you place the trap...
Yeah, you put it on yourself.
Yeah, if when he sets the trap, you put it on top of your own models, then they don't have to take that POW 10.
Oh, and never stand right behind the trap if there are druids on the field, because they will pull your shit into it. And that's just a terrible place to be.
I hadn't thought about that, but that's dirty, actually.
Epic Grim went from def 16 to 5.
That's horrible. Oh, my God. That's amazing. Anyway, that's awesome. No, the thing that I was going to say was there are certain matchups where that trap is going to just be a gift from God. Any non-reach melee weapon, melee troopers...
Heck, I mean, with a 5-inch, even reach, you know, if you just stand your dudes in the back of the trap, you can really fuck with them.
Yeah. You can deny a large portion of attacks, but you still, like, you can't get away, you can't be completely safe from reach attacks, but you are completely safe from non-reach attacks.
Yeah.
And, like, Kyazis, for instance.
Yeah, fuck those guys.
They hate this trap.
Miss Hunters.
So many times where my bomber just wanders into the middle of a bunch of Kyazis. Starts throwing bombs at them, and then the trap guy goes up and lays the trap on the middle of him, and then reforms, you know, back out of the way.
That guy gets murdered by Chaosies, but whatever, you know, he got his trap.
Well, he gets murdered. I mean, if the Chaosies are there, you know, after they've
been bombed,
and then a lot of the times he can kind of hide behind the trap at an angle so that they can't get to him either. You know, they have to run to engage him or something like that.
Unfortunately, he's the one guy who's never hidden inside the trap.
That's true, he can never set the trap on top of himself since it has to be in base to base. Anyway, that's Grim. He's got the reform is a big deal. We didn't really touch on that either, but being able to move and then shoot and then move again.
One thing that the one question is begged by the existence of Epic Grim. I mean, you guys have that much maligned machine gun unit, the Trollkin shooters.
Sluggers.
If anyone's ever going to make them any good, it's Epic Grim. I mean, you can get +2 to hit and +2 to damage from his mortality. You get +2 more to hit from his feet. They can move and still aim 2 inches with apparition. Given all this stuff, have you ever been able to get any use out of Sluggers with him?
I've never even considered it.
Ouch. Sluggers.
Sorry, Sluggers, you're bad.
Well, there it is. Uncompromising, that's how we do it. Truth to power. The Sluggers Union is just going to have to join the Skinners and be sad.
If someone can take Sluggers with him and really get a lot of work out of them and make them good, you know, props to them. So
yeah.
I'm not going to be the guy that tries, though. I don't even own them.
Well, also it's funny that they have still got takedown on their swords, the main unit that is. That's just kind of silly.
Yeah, I like it. I had Grim take down a Hyperion once.
Aha! Hyperion!
Which actually kind of sucked because I wanted to be behind that cover.
Yeah, long time ago I was a Crix player. My first War Machine weekend I lost to, I think, you, because it turns out Saxon Auric does not, in fact, give you a soul on your feet turn, because the Jackass has takedown.
I don't remember this, but
I was playing Terminus, he got clubbed by Doomshaper. If it wasn't you, it was somebody else.
It must have been someone else.
Okay, well, the reason was that his feet armor was 1.2 low, because Saxon Auric's victim didn't give me a soul token, because the doofus has a fucking takedown.
That's amazing. So, awesome.
Okay, so what do you think about the tier list for Epic Grim? I think it's the Hunter's Grim, or Hunting Party, something like that. What do you think? Do you think that's a list that'll ever get played?
Yeah, I think so. It's an interesting tier list in that it denotes a very different playstyle and list composition than you would probably normally build with him ever.
And then Thumper some Cruise.
Of the, yeah, one of the benefits, yeah, the reduced cost of Thumper Crews is actually a really interesting benefit.
I mean, anytime you get a 33% cost increase in a unit that's also buffed by the model, it's a big deal.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've considered running this. The only thing is, you know, most Trollblood players, I think, probably own only one Thumper Crew. So that's one of the downsides of this theme force is that, you know, you're probably, if you really want to get a lot of use out of it, you're probably playing, like, two or three four thumpers. And then you're not going to be able to play those thumpers in any other list, so they're just going to be for this one list, and it's going to be a lot of
big games, right? Don't you guys play some big games from time to time? You know, 150 points, that sort of thing? Unbound?
I mean, we never do that in Iowa, but, you know, I don't know how things roll in Atlanta.
We're actually big-time, big-game players. We love that shit. All sorts of ridiculous things are tried. We once had a whole unit of Ancestral Guardians with Hakkar as the UA, deployed by Steven. There were 11 of the son of a bitches. And it tore through that flank like a hurricane. But all sorts of nonsense happens, so extra models are never, you know, wasted. But,
it's hard enough for us to get our models out of the bag.
Ambushing scouts is kind of cool. They've got Hunter, right?
Yeah, they do. Ambushing scouts, I haven't really thought about that a lot. Obviously ambushing anything is good. But, they don't have reach, so it's going to be hard to get use out of them in melee on the ambushing flank.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have to try and get models that are within, you know, what, 15 inches of the table edge.
Well, they got assault, right? They throw those, scouts a lot.
They do have assault. They do have assault, so they could potentially, you know, throw at...
appear behind some bitches, charge them, throw axes, stay behind some woods.
Yeah, and especially with mortality, and if you have the feet, you know, they can get some really good assaults off. So, yeah, like I said, I don't hate it, you know, at all. And scouts are actually a really, really good unit just in general, so any theme force that revolves around taking scouts, like, I'm not against. I've got two units of them, you know. Plus I've been looking for a list that takes, you know, most advantage out of them.
Also, just the shame factor of it, you know, your opponent moves forward and you're like, all right, mortality, thumper crew, assaulting scouts from behind. You know, you're like, wow, not only am I dead, I'm, you know, invisible. I can't even tell anyone how it happened.
I got charged by hillbilly trolls and kills.
I think my character was banjoed. Like, that just happened.
Yep. Oh, man.
Okay.
It's a really interesting theme for us. I think it could be, and then obviously the big issue with it is that, or not issue, but the thing that everyone's talking about is that the Trollkin Highwaymen unit that we don't know anything about.
I had it put to me that they might be on horses.
Yeah, a lot of people think they're going to be on horses because Highwaymen, the class, the profession. Mm-hmm. Or whatever in the IKRPG comes with a horse.
I don't know. I'm seeing a giant pig. I mean, that the pig that is carried away by the scouts is going to be ridden by the grown-up scouts who become highwaymen.
I don't think they're going to be calf. That's just my opinion.
Okay. What else might they be?
I'm thinking a unit of trolls with guns.
You've got a few of those.
Some sort. Yeah, we've got trolls with
like troll Cossite woodsmen with ambush and terrible stats.
Well, they can't have ambush because that'd be redundant with this theme force.
Yeah, true.
So we know that about them. Or no, that's just scouts. I'm sorry. Yeah, maybe they will have ambush. Who knows?
You'd have a whole ambushing army at that point.
You'd have a whole ambushing army. See your deployment zone. And it's just Grand Metal Warbeast.
Then drop pods. You know, bad memories from a certain other game.
I never played that game.
Well, I
don't know. I for some reason, I think they're going to be trolls with sort of less flavorful, you know, guns. Like
just ordinary guns.
Maybe, guns like more in the vein of Jarl. Like, I don't think it's going to be a unit of hand cannons, although that would be fantastic.
Yeah. Don't think anyone would be like, dang it, they gave me another warlock unit. That'd be...
If we had a unit of military rifles,
yeah.
I think that would be really good.
Oh, back me up on this. Jarl, good caster, right?
Yeah, fantastic caster.
Okay, cool. If you were numbering your casters 1 through 12, with 1 being the best caster and 12 being the worst caster in Trolls, where would Jarl be? My buddies in Atlanta are mean to him. They feel that he is a bad caster, but I feel that he is a good
one. Really? No, I like him a lot. How would I rate him on that?
Just mull it over while we do the rest of the stuff. What do you feel about the Trollbloods fluff in this book? Sorry, storyline. My bad.
I haven't read all of the book.
Come on, man. It's been out for... I'll tell you about it, alright? Grimm... bites Rask.
Oh yeah, I did read that actually.
And then
that story was fun. I don't know. It's sort of more of all of the Trollblood fluff in general is kind
very last of Mohicans.
Well, that's not what I was going to go for. I was going to go for more. They just seem like fun excuses to tell stories about the characters, but they don't really ever do anything of consequence.
Well, you know, I mean, there's already a shadow war going on, which is a silly enough concept. You know, you're like, all right, nations are fighting. It's World War One. I'm like, okay, cool. He's like, also, five paramilitary groups are having an entirely separate fight. It's like, how did they not get run over by armies of whoever? You know, it's like, what happened in this village? Well, vicious, you know, human demon-worshipping guys with werewolf servants fought an indigenous endangered species until an empire attacked them from the east. Like, and nobody notices shit. It really does seem like someone might tell the nations of Imran that all these random nations, random, you know, indigenous groups have monsters working for them.
Right. It will tell you this about the Rask, the Trollblood, the Grim Rask fluff, is that I liked their attention to detail, because Grim, it seemed like Grim was pretty much kicking Rask's ass until Rask popped his feet. And that feet is not fair even a little bit, so I mean, that attention to detail.
I don't want to be mean to Grim, but I don't think there's going to be any dispute from you when I say that Rask is a better warlock than Epic Grim.
Oh, I don't think that there's a lot of casters in the game that are better than Rask. Yeah.
Rask might be, and I say this with full knowledge of Epic Morvana, Rask might be the best warlock in this book.
I don't disagree with that.
I mean, she's stellar. She's got that skills of fate, all this stuff's going on, but Rask is... I mean, you just look at him and you're like, I can't even begin to fathom what was going on.
If nothing else, it's definitely close between Rask and Morvana, which is ridiculous that I can't say that.
Yeah, he's a fishman, but he has Iris's gun, except better, boostable, and three of the four greatest spells you could ever ask for.
Yeah, and one of the best feats in the game.
Yeah, a great feat too. Defensive feats, you know. I love that shit.
Mm-hmm.
We've wandered Field of Lilies. Let's bring it back in with the Night Troll. Tell me about the Night Troll. How many out of your 12 Trollblood, okay, so, Team ATL format, you've got 12 lists, and you're going to some tournament where it's important to win. You know, you're winning your family back from the Russians, you're playing the devil for your soul, whatever. You're not allowed to cheat, but you're bringing the 12 best lists you can. It's not character restricted. How many of those lists include one or more Night Trolls?
I think maybe three. Two, ooh, for sure, maybe three.
I gotta hear it. Tell me the uses that you see for the Night Troll.
I'm not a fan of this guy. It's like the one dud release that I think we got. Mountain King notwithstanding. He's just got a lot of really weird rules, that don't really end up doing anything better than anything else that we can throw.
You don't feel like Mat 5, POW 12, free charge is a thing?
No.
Speed 5,
also,
man.
Eyeless sight with no gun and no pathfinder, so, you know, what does it matter that he can see through forests? Like, that's just purely a fluff.
Hey, man, the guy has stealth. That's a thing.
Stealth is nice.
That's serious. That actually is a thing.
That is the first troll model that has been released with stealth. That is nice. I mean, the Animus is restricted to living models only, which drives me crazy. And then the fact that he's not that survivable... I mean, he's 12-15. Stealth is his only, you know, really good defensive trait. But if he's, you know, beguiling in a bunch of, you know, melee beaters, then he's just going to die. So the uses that I see for him, I mean, obviously they revolve around, perhaps not obviously, but they do revolve around his Animus, because it's an interesting Animus. Maybe not good because of all of the restrictions on it, but it's definitely interesting.
Yeah, anytime you can control the enemy's movement without rolling dice, you have to think about it.
Sorry, can we take a moment?
Oh, sure. While Chad takes care of that, I just want to point out to the world that the model of the Night Troll is just incredibly cool. I mean, he's got this horrifying tongue and, like, spikes on his back and giant claw hands. I mean, really, if this guy looks like he could have an arm wrestling match with a heavy... and just because of his enormous hands, he might win by, like, digging his talons into the back of the hands of the heavy. This would be heavy war beast. A heavy war jack obviously wouldn't care about his taloned hands digging into the back of their hands because they don't feel things. They're robots. Robots can't feel things. They don't have nervous systems. I mean, real robots don't. It's possible that a war jack might. I've never actually considered that, but it could. And, you know, undead Warbeast wouldn't, so Malox Warbeast would presumably be able to match the Night Troll. And, you know, Warbeast might have claws of their own. I was considering it from the perspective of, like, a troll Warbeast with big hands. There are a lot. But certainly a Circle Ouroboros Warbeast with, you know, its enormous claws, or, God help us, a Scorn Warbeast with four arms would be a fearsome arm wrestling competitor. You couldn't even really say how that goes.
That's funny.
Are you back?
That's funny. It's funny because the claws on this guy, everyone thought that he would have reach. So that's just another, like, add that to the disappointment pile, I guess.
He is a cool looking model, though.
That's such a shame about it is I do like the model. Like, a lot of people say, like, you know, John from our podcast, he really thinks that it's derpy looking. I like it though.
No way, man. He's out of his mind. I saw the thing at, Lock and Load. This thing is great looking.
Yeah, I like how it looks too, but, no, so here's the uses that I came up with it. And they revolve around the Animus, like I was saying. So Epic Gristle.
Okay.
She one of her shots that she can do, she's one of our weirder ranged casters that I've been trying to get more play into lately. One of her shots, drops a 4-inch AoE, that, you know, enemy models suffer a pow 12 if they move into it. Sort of like a Mage Storm, non-magical Mage Storm. Any effect like that where you can, deny a portion of the table, via, you know, AoE or other damaging effect, and then force them to not be able to move away from that area of the table, that's good denial, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely. If you trap them in the Mage Storm, then you say, okay, dude, you can't advance away from this model until he's dead, but the guys who want to kill him have to get through the Mage Storm. That'd be pretty cool.
Even, like, you know, problem models like Kyazi Assassins with their ability to kill stroke and then move through all of your stuff, if they're being beguiled, and then they can't move towards the model that they're being beguiled, or they will die, then you are spending, you know, 4 points to negate a 10-point unit, which is really, really good value.
I mean, you've got the basic bait and switch, too. You know, he runs up to some 10-point beast and does his thing, and they're like, all right, you can use that Warp Wolf to kill him, but it's going to die to the counter trade. Now you've traded 10 points for four.
That's true, actually. I mean, him versus Warbeast is definitely better than him versus Warjax. That's something that I hadn't considered when I'd been raiding him, but, like, if he can get his paralysis off on a Warp Wolf or a Legion, you know, like Angel or something like that, you know, then you definitely get a lot of use out of him and a lot of work out of him.
So, you mentioned you might have two or three lists that would have him in it. What would those lists be? Like, what casters would you take him with? Is that the Epic, Gristle?
So I talked about Epic Gristle. Epic Grim has a lot of that same stuff going on with him because he's got that trap that he can lay, so you can lay the trap down and then force guys to run into the trap. It's pretty sweet. And then just as a third caster, like, I didn't really think of anything specific, but there's definitely, like, I mean, there's definitely casters that I would consider him with, at least.
Okay.
Maybe like an Epic Madrak or Prime Madrak just for his ability to bunch models up, which both of those casters love.
Yeah, Madrak, the Mind Beasts are only here for the Fury.
Exactly. Well, I don't know. Maybe not, actually, but, I mean, yeah, his Animus, you know, is just, it will force models to bunch up, or at least to not spread out farther than they already are. And that's good for either of them. So, you know, I'd consider at least putting him in one of their lists, but I haven't actually thought of a specific list that would have him in it. But any other caster, like, I just don't see him.
Okay. That's entirely fair. I mean, you haven't listened to the previous cast, but many models get zeros and ones. So, I mean, even a rating of, like, two or three is a fairly positive one for a dead entry, certainly.
All right.
But speaking of an entry that isn't dead, what do you think about the Warders?
Oh my god, I could not be more in love with this. Well, that's not true. I could be a little bit more in love with them, but I'm incredibly in love with them as they are. I mean, this is one of those models that, like, there was a record of me, you know, posting on the forums on that, like I was saying, on the day of woe and misery, when these guys were spoiled and everyone was sad that they were speed 4 and that they were only POW 10 and that, you know, they didn't have any of the, you know, rules that anyone wanted. And there was a little bit of of sadness revolving around these guys. But this was one of those models that this is one of the releases that the more and more I thought about it, the better and better and better they seemed. And I think that their biggest factor is that they're 8 points.
Yeah. That's, I mean, you know, 8 points for a max unit is blood trackers. Like, that's, you know, it's not a unit that is that tough.
And it's not 8 points for just five guys. It's 8 points for five mostly armor 21 guys, which is incredible value. Who for the most part will kill whatever, you know, charts them.
Mat 7 weapon masters, you know, a little bit, right?
So, I mean, people were sad about the POW 10. People were sad about the Speed 4. But 8 points really goes a long ways to alleviate all of those problems. And then just the fact that, like, I love this unit. I just love its play style. Champions get so bunched up in their ability to try and survive because they need to get that plus two armor from defensive lines. So usually you need to run them in groups of three or more to, you know, just be bunched up as possible. And they have a very small footprint. And then also their lack of reach. So those two rules, or those two things, you know, really combine to give them a very small footprint on the table. Now, whatever wanders into that footprint is going to die.
Screaming.
Yeah, but it's so easy to not do that. Warders with reach and the ability to, and they have absolutely no incentive to stay next to each other, to stand next to each other, so they just spread really far. And they cover... Easily one unit of warders will cover two or three times the area of one unit of champions.
It's really easy to compare them with the skinwalkers from Circle. You know, they're both 5/8 units. They're three models and five models. They're both the most, you know, stalwart and tough to kill guys running around in their particular faction. The Circle one is, of course, faster, and the Troll one is, of course, heavily armored. But, you know, that's just the faction's natures.
I mean, I think this is one of the best heavy infantry units in the game, in my opinion. I know that Kaor looked at these guys and they compare them to shock troopers and they just get really, really, really sad. Because these guys are everything that shock troopers. You know, they're weapon masters. They don't have to stay, they don't have to, you know, get an order, to, you know, get ridiculously high armor values so they can run every turn. I mean, battle driven is just an incredibly good.
Yeah.
Especially for trolls.
I mean, there's nothing like battle-driven. I can't tell you the number of times I've seen some scrub be playing against Brian's cav and be like, all right, last activation, somebody shoots one of the cav models. And I'm like, you fool. You've just given it plus two damage the whole way, and they're Pathfinders now. He's going to martyr. Like, you've only killed yourself. You might as well have shot your own caster.
That Pathfinder was something that I felt was completely... completely superfluous, like, you know, it didn't matter to me at all, but it's actually a really big deal. All the lists that I ended up making with these guys, I'm always like, well, do I need a Fellcrawler? And then I'm like, probably not, you know? They've got Pathfinder, like, you know, if they get hurt, and if they don't get hurt, you know, well, that's fine.
They can get there slow and steady, they're not hurt.
Yeah. It's a win-win for me either way. If they don't get shot at, I'm fine with that. And if they do, then they get an incredibly nice benefit for it. The list that I've been playing with these guys that I've been loving the most is Epic Crystal, actually. So these guys, I feel like, really turn her on her head, whereas she was a caster that everyone was kind of like, well, she's, you know, she's good? Question mark?
Yeah.
Like, some people really, really like
her. We're not allowed to dislike things in these forums, but she doesn't do anything at all.
Right.
Nothing.
You never see her, is the thing. I've taken her to one tournament, and it was a very small tournament. It was a recruits con a couple of years ago, actually. And it was mostly for fun. Like, I did not have any aspirations of winning that tournament. I just wanted to take her to a bigger, or, you know, to a wider field and see how she would do over the course of a day. And I wasn't extremely impressed. You know, I hadn't really worked out a list that I liked yet, but man, these guys do everything that she wants. Like, sprint really helps, or dash really helps them get across the field quicker. Like, that speed 5 is much...
Much faster than speed 4.
It's funny how the numbers are, you know, only one apart, but they're so wildly different. But yeah, speed 5 lets them actually get up into the table. Her feet seems just custom designed for them. You know, one of the worst feats in the game, people say, but it actually works really well with this unit, so I like to take two units with her.
I don't know, I feel like the worst feat in the game has to be an offensive feat that increases accuracy, but doesn't give you any attacks you wouldn't already have. I don't know, maybe like a Pelagoth feat or something?
I don't know. An additional die to hit on everything is really... ensuring that nothing misses for a turn is really good.
Except that you were only going to make attacks normally that were... like, you know, you didn't bring a bunch of stuff that's going to miss. Right? I mean, it makes sure that those Death Striders hit things, but they were gonna...
I had never thought of that. I had never heard of that.
I don't know. I've got fairly, you know, calmly set in my ways and my opinions about things. And
sure.
So when I see this feat actually as saying, look, I'm adding two to the arm. You know, that may be two-fifths of a striker's feat, but it still does things. Directrix's feat...
Well, that's one of the complaints that people have. About Gristle's feat, actually, is that why doesn't it just give flat plus two armor to everything instead it gives unyielding, you know, which is...
Yeah, the lame version.
Yeah, and I mean, I would certainly like it. Then the way that I think of the feat is, you know, okay, well, I've got my feat to give all my guys plus two armor when I need it, but, so that's the way I think of it, but that's not actually the way that it, you know, works. But it does work with warders surprisingly well, because, you know, warders, you don't need the feat to survive an assault. To survive an alpha strike, which you will need to take since they're so slow.
Yeah.
But then once you've taken that alpha strike, and then they're setting up usually their second wave to strike you again, then you pop the feat, and then they are a pain in the ass.
Mm-hmm.
They will not go down to anything when they're armor 23.
Especially if the thing is not charging.
Yeah, and then the unyielding is actually kind of funny too. Like, this doesn't matter, you know, it hasn't made an effect on me, on my games so far, but eventually someone will shoot something and then they'll be able to walk into melee or do something.
It's like, enjoying your, what's it called, gnarl horn, being like, one day counter slam's happening. It's never happening. We don't trick yourself, but,
Yeah. I've seen that win games before, but man, they were small. They were small games between two newbies.
Yeah. No,
I don't think I don't think you're ever going to see that at a tournament level.
Well, I have, in fact, don't want to, why not? I have beaten a guy at an Adepticon tournament because Molg moved up and trip ones a try and punch a Shadowhorn. Now, he had previously been counter-slammed, but the stupid goddamn Gnarlhorn missed him. I was like, counter-slam Molg, game over, double ones.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Son of a awful bitch. And then Wild Aggression Molg took his charge swing, and he's about to eat two fucking beasts. And trip ones, the Shadowhorn fell on his face.
That's actually not the first time I've heard of a story like that. Crump told me a story once where he had an Avatar charge a Warp Wolf Stalker, and the Gnarlhorn was able to counter slam it, and it would have hit. It would have, you know, he hadn't activated the book yet, so it would have knocked down the Avatar, and it also would have gone over two choir members. And then he rolled a three. He rolled a three to hit.
Every fucking time, man.
Yeah. What are the odds? Anyway.
The gods are unkind.
Anyway,
warders. How many warlocks would you take warders with?
I'd say 12, actually. I can think of lists where I would have all of these guys, where I would have these guys in every list. They're really good. They're solid.
I'm having difficulty 12?
That's the thing, is like, that's what I was telling you about before the podcast. Like, it kind of depends on what I want to do at a tournament.
You're trying to win this tournament. This tournament is with the Mafia for the life of your family.
Yeah, I can think of lists where I would take, like, maybe, I guess, 10 or 11. Like, it kind of depends on what I'm feeling that day, but I can definitely think of tournament quality lists that I would want to take to a tournament that I would win that would have warders in almost all of my lists.
Okay.
I mean, they're that good. I would pair them up with any... Like, I'm just looking at any of my casters, and I would pair them up with any of them.
I'm just saying that, you know, that there are beast-only casters and trolls. You know, there's a whole brick playstyle.
Yeah, two of our casters. But, I mean, the thing is, like Prime Madrak is one of those beast brick casters, and he... And warders are one of the best adds for his lists.
Yeah, I guess he could certainly brick with warders instead.
Absolutely. I mean, then the defense 14 on top of the armor 21, and then they have reach for his feet, you know, which is really good. Like, yeah, and his ability to give them mat 9 without having to take a fell, like, or even mat 11 if you do have a fell caller and you can stack up the carnage. Like, it's really,
yeah. It seems like awesome stuff.
So, yeah, I mean, that was one of the things that Flanzer was telling me when I was talking to him about these guys, was that he was super excited for them with P-Madrex specifically. I might not take them with either Doomshaper, so maybe 10. But, I mean, I'm just thinking of all the other casters off the top of my head. You know, I've already talked about Epic Gristle. They're amazing with P-Gristle. She does everything that they want. She gives them an extra attack to shore up their one attack, you know, deficiency. She lets them move faster with Hoof It, you know. She's, you know, buffs their, you know, she's just everything. She stops them from getting charged by infantry, which increases their survivability, you know, even further. Jarl speeds them up. Epic Madrak, you know, can give them, can make them double weapon masters, which really, you know, sets the pouch down. Yeah. He just loves reach models in general because of the utility that he can get off of his feet and reach models.
True.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of all of them. Like, they're all of our casters, any of our shooting casters would love these guys because of the same reason that I take them with Epic Gristle. They are a tar pit that never dies. And
fair enough.
So, if you can, I mean, the biggest problem with them then is that they're a tar pit that's slow. But, if you can manage to, you know, run with them for two or three turns in a row and then, you know, just have them sitting out in the middle of the table.
I mean, we are a meta that has seen recently Fed Asian playing Bastions, you know. So slow tar bits are clearly a thing that doesn't, you know, is not wildly hated in this world.
Yeah, I mean, speed 8, like, you can still get halfway across the table on, with, you know, using your deployment.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a whole Balder list that the speed and defenses don't even add up to 10 for most of my models.
Right. But yeah, so I mean, I could definitely see these guys with any of our casters. I mean, you know, Borka puts Iron Flesh on them, and now talk about, you know.
Yeah, there's a tar pit.
Yeah, I could definitely see these guys with all of our casters. Like, I would, and I love them that much, you know. The thing is, like, with being 8 points, I would almost always take 2 units of them. Almost always. Which is funny because a lot of the beefier Trollblood modules add up to 16 points, which is exactly what these guys do too, so they fit into a lot of,
yeah,
you know, champions.
Here. Let's change it out. We're just gonna have two of these.
Yeah, exactly. Like a max unit of champions with Scaldi and a champion hero, 16 points. A max unit of long riders with Horthal, 16 points. So these guys fit it right in.
Yeah, and instead you just get 10 reach weapon masters. I like it.
Right. Yeah. So I'm a big fan of these guys.
Fair
enough. I can't wait for them to come out.
All right, well, let's move on then. Tell me about the Trollkin Sorcerer.
Sure. This is one of those models that we've been clamoring for ages. We needed a model that, you know, we've been begging and begging and begging for a model that helps our Crix match up in any way whatsoever.
It's like the Gallows Grove.
Yeah, exactly. And this guy is, I'm not sure if that was specifically their thought when they made him, but he definitely does help out in that manner. And as a 1 point buy, I think that he's extremely, extremely solid. So I'm pretty excited about this sorcerer coming out too. 1 point models that can make magic attacks and then also give you a little bit of insurance against upkeep, against the offensive upkeeps. I love it.
Yeah, there's nothing like someone being like, okay, I'm going to cast Crippling Grasp in your unit. And you're just like, okay, well, they're dead. I mean, not instantly, but ultimately that unit is never doing anything.
Mm-hmm. So if they don't kill it.
Yeah, if they do not instantly slay it, you know, just the Harbinger's like, oh, yeah, bottom two, I guess I'm going to put the no-charge spell on your
yeah.
dudes with Bison. And you're like, great,
God.
We're done. Fantastic.
Yep. Yep, and then they've randomly also, you know, like Ice Bolt is what they end up usually doing most of the time, and you just basically get a 1 point Magic 6 range 10 POW 12, which is decent.
Sure.
You know, the games that I've played with these guys so far, it's extremely, extremely uncommon for them to not kill at least 1 point worth of models because they get to do their free Ice Bolt every turn. Yeah. And most of the time when your opponent's turn is happening, they have better targets to hit than these random, you know, dinky little sorcerers, like, standing in the back.
I mean, it's not so much that they remove upkeeps from the unit, it's that because they exist, the enemy won't cast upkeeps on the unit. It's the same as the disbinding effect, right?
Which is fantastic.
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely worth 1 point. If you've got, you know, a 11-point unit of champs or whatever, you're like, here, these guys are here, so the enemy doesn't cast pursuit on the unit.
Exactly. I haven't gotten used out of the Battle Wizard yet, but I'm not sure that I ever will, being that they're mat 5 and top 10.
If you want to cast a spell, you don't want to tie that spell to an extra 30%, you know?
Yeah. People were complaining about the fact that he's only Magic Ability 6, and my counter-argument to that is that he's only 1 point.
Yeah. No, that's the only... That is the only counter-argument you can legitimately make. I mean, if you try and go any other direction, like saying that, you know, these are acceptable numbers or whatever... It doesn't work. What you have to say is, look, what did you want for this model?
Mm-hmm. And it's funny, he's also got Winter Storm, which is the Linus Arisal ability to remove Eyeless Sight and Pathfinder from models that begin within his command range. That's pretty situational, but I like that he has it, because it gives me that option. You know, and if I only get use out of that one out of every 20 games... You know, fine.
Being a little generous with one out of every 20, but yeah, I hope it happens so. For you. No, I've used Linus Arisal. I have Cassius, so obviously you can see that that's a thing that you'd try, but it can't.
I got used out of it the very first time I proxied these guys.
What?
It was funny. I was playing, what was this? Oh, it was actually, I was playing Prime Gristle 1. And she threw out a couple of rifts to try and kill some blood trackers because I just needed that.
You try and make her work, don't you? You actually put a lot of work in that Prime Gristle.
She's probably my favorite caster.
She's got no spell list. Can't fight.
Are you kidding me?
No. I mean, she's got no melee attack worth it. I mean, she has a very underwhelming melee presence. You know, she's not a hard fighter. Her spell list is weak. She's entirely about one mechanic. But you're right. I am trolling you.
I will fight you.
You'd win that. I am a wimp.
Gristle's amazing. No, so I threw out some random rifts, and then the guy that I was playing against ended up stone teleporting one of his Warpwolf Stalkers into the rift. And then he, you know, sprint, attack, 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 kill some stuff, and then sprint away. And I'm like, Winterstorm?
Yeah. You're not sprinting very far away, bro.
Yeah, you only got to sprint 3 inches. That's pretty great.
That is almost exactly, to my mind, like Orin Midwinter's anti-magic ability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from time to time, when the stars align, you can see some use happen from that. But
oh yeah,
mostly what happens is that this model lives to you know, turn off spells, and the rest of the game it casts its stinky little magic attack. But he's 1 point, so we're not angry with him.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because there's actually synergy with Epic Gristle again. Like this model, or you know, this guy in Warders, like seems like they were pretty much made for her. So I don't know if they were trying to make this book to try and get her to some play eventually, but you know, she does have an inhospitable ground. So that with the combination of Winter Storm, you can take two of these guys, and then instead of just having them just for the arcane antidote, you could actually try and play them more aggressively up front to try and deny. You know, play a heavily denial game, you know, shutting off Pathfinder.
See, now you're trolling me, man. You can't... 8 inches on a one-hit point model whose stats are not quite victim. Like, 12, 15 is victim 10. Stats. Eh. Haven't you heard Terran's going to be everywhere? They'll just use Terran to see through and kill him.
That's if they're shooting... If they're spending a two-point model activation...
To kill two one-point models?
That's fine.
I don't think you're going to see that a lot, but I could be wrong.
No, I agree. It's super corner case, but I like that it's a possibility.
Yeah, it's never bad to have abilities on the card. What do you think, by contrast, about a model that is less corner case, about the Kithkar?
I mean, this is the Trollblood combat solo that we've been. You know, wanting forever. And they tried to give us one with the Skinner a couple of books ago, and that, you know, did not go over well. And it just seems like this guy is everything that the Skinner should have been. He's got reach, he's got two attacks, you know, he's got incredible special abilities, he's extremely hard to kill, like, I love this guy.
Well, that's a fairly full-throated endorsement of him. Would you say that you will take him whenever you take Fenblades?
I mean, so far, well, I guess he hasn't been released so far. I've definitely, like, my Epic Madrek list has Fenblades in it right now, and I don't have 2 points to spare, but I've been really, really trying to retool it so that I can get those 2 points, because Tactician is probably my favorite ability.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to move through your own guys and not have to worry about that. And then, he just does, he's extremely solid for a 2 point buy. You know, he'll easily do 2 points worth of work. I mean, if you put buffs on him, I could see him even screwing up, you know, heavy pretty bad. And trolls have a lot of buffs that they can throw out on, you know, models like that. And then also his ability to do out of activation, to do a little bit of out of activation clearing.
Yeah, that's nice. Useful.
Yeah, so he can get his 6-inch move during the maintenance phase and possibly kill a model then. And then, you know, activate later and charge, you know, even farther. So yeah, I would definitely try and get this guy anytime that I was using Fenblades, but it kind of depends on how I want to use the Fenblades in that list. If I'm just purely taking the Fenblades as a tar pit, then he's probably not as good. But in contrast to that, Fenblades are not the best tar pit that we have because their stats are so poor, so they rely more on their speed to, you know, get up the table than their defensive stats. So, if I was taking them just as a tar pit, I might leave this guy at home. But otherwise, I would probably try and fit him in any time that I was taking them.
Well, I mean, you can take your Thralg and drop him, and you get this guy plus the countering dude. As long as you only got one unit that might have a thing on it, you're probably set at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well, I'll probably end up dropping out of my Epic Madrek list is Victor Pendrake, although that'll hurt. I love Victor Pendrake.
Yeah, Pendrake, I don't know. I usually take Alton Ashley instead of him if I'm feeling charitable towards needy solos.
I like Alton Ashley, too. But, yeah, this guy's 100%. He's definitely solid. So yeah. I would... If you're ever taking a list with Fenblades, I would probably try and fit the 2 points in to get him in. And, you know, I've often even thought about, like, taking two of them, because I think that they're just... They're one of those models that it seems like, for their point value, it's hard to not get the amount of work out of them.
I mean, the man has 8 wounds, for goodness sakes.
And is going to be frequently armor 19.
Yeah, 12-19 with 8 wounds. He's tough. He attacks twice. He's mat 7, at least. He can move through models. He lets your Fengades move through each other. You know, there's no bad here. I think he's command. He's a commander, command 9,
yep.
Is that right?
He's randomly a commander, too.
This is a great model.
It. Yeah, that's... I mean, if you get to live the dream and kill 3 models with him, you know, a turn for Righteous Vengeance and then a charge attack, that is probably his point value right there. And then he's going to eat up valuable attacks the next turn.
Yeah, they have to kill him.
Yeah, and he's not easy to kill. So, yeah, I think he's fantastic.
And I mean, this is Trolls, the faction that can add things to roles, you know. Like, ultimately, he may come in as a weapon master with pluses to hit and damage from being engaged with a troll or some guy holding a rock nearby, you know. He ultimately comes in hitting like the butcher if you need him to kill somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm trying to make the perfect Epic Madrek list right now that has 2 units of Fenblades and 2 of these guys. But it's hard. And then, my dream would be to just, you know, have you send out these 2 guys as 2 missiles.
Together they kill a fucking heavy.
Yeah, put rage on both of them so that they've got past 16s.
Cycle the upkeep between them so they can be weapon masters twice.
Oh yeah, they could easily kill a heavy between, if you're doing that, but, hasn't come to me yet, but I'm working on it.
Fair enough. It's always good to know that the Warforge is going over there. New list being created in the fertile Iowan soil. But where do you go after him? What is the next thing you guys have released? Is it our notorious Gargantuan? It is.
Yep.
So time has been kind, and you've gotten the chance to play this model a good bit. What do you think about the Mountain King?
Oh, man. I mean, I've talked at length on the Mountain King. He's got He's such a... Oh, Mountain King. there's just so many almosts on this guy. He's just, he's almost what I want. Almost, in so many ways, but, you know, I think that because of the way that they ended up setting him up, that he can be good if you dedicate an entire list towards him, and because of his point value and then the amount of support that you pretty much require every time you put him on the table, you almost have to dedicate your entire list to him if you ever put him on the table.
So, I mean,
but if you do that, you can get some kind of, you can get some good gimmicky lists that are, you know, basically just, you know, tank lists.
Like, what if you build the Mountain King gimmick list? You take Epic Doom Shaper and, a Mountain King and an Earthborn and, I don't know, Molg just to be Molg and some stones and Janissa, and you say, that's look, it. I'm gonna make you fight these three guys in a row with all these buffs on them. Is that a good list? Can that win?
That can win. I mean, that did win. Right? That's what you played at, Lock and Load, right? You played against, rather. I think you might have cut out. Yeah, I'm not hearing any audio right now.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, sorry, yeah. I was saying that mistakes were made, and I leaned back in my chair, and my belly sort of spilled over my microphone thing, and just kind of pressed the mute button.
Oh, no.
And as a consequence, you lost the awesome rant.
Oh, no.
Yeah, well, the gist was that I lost that game by my own errors, and certainly my opponent had nothing to do with it.
Sure.
I can't possibly give credit to another skilled player. It must have been me.
Absolutely not.
Humble brag.
But anyway, I definitely think of it. I definitely think that that list has potential just because it's so much beef to get through. But, you know, the way that I've actually found the most success with him is with Prime Gristle again. My favorite caster.
It's an illness.
It's mostly her, because the things that I found that really threaten him are,
War Beasts.
No, actually, infantry that get lots of buffs, or that can make lots of attacks. Because any beast, you're gonna have to send two beasts in to kill this guy if he's armor 23. I can't think of a single beast in the game that's gonna kill this guy in one round. Maybe a bronze back.
I was gonna say, Last Standard Mammoth.
Yeah.
Pulverize it, and you know it.
A Last Standard Mammoth would definitely vaporize this guy.
You'll have three attacks left to kill a fucking other heavy.
Yeah. But there's not very many beasts that I would consider dangerous to this guy one-on-one. Even other Colossals, like, not very many of them. You know, the Gargantuans are certainly more...
Colossals are one of the worst ways to spend points in terms of a heavy that kills other heavies.
What's that?
Colossals are one of the worst ways to spend points for a heavy that kills other heavy, you know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, well, the thing is they better kill it in one turn.
Right. Otherwise, he's back.
Yeah. And the unfortunate thing about this guy is that a lot of the times if you don't kill him in one turn, you know, he's not that suited to killing you back. Because he's essentially just a less accurate Molg.
Okay, in my world, Molg is totally suited to killing things.
Sure.
Like, if you describe someone as a less accurate Molg, I still feel like there's a lot of things he can kill. You know, for example, a Kador in heavy fails to kill him, he can scrap that shit.
Yeah, easily, a Kador heavy. I mean, Forced Evolution Getarix.
Then he didn't survive.
So much.
He got hit by Forced Evolution Getarix, then it was, he's deceased.
What's Getarix Pow get up to? 22?
23. 23? Yeah, it starts at 17, it's at 6.
So he gets to charge for free because it's Epic Kaya.
So there's and 10 and a half damage from the charge for free.
Plus then an additional 4 auto-hitting pow 7, or auto-hitting, you know, dice damage.
So 4 times 7 is 28. We're at 39. Goes up to, like, 43 from the claw. Yeah,
that almost does it by himself, and then if he can get any incidental
some pure blood sprays his ass.
Yep, that probably kills him. But, you know, on the off chance that it doesn't, like, it's not 100%, you know.
Sure, and then the Mountain King doesn't want to be like, I'm boosting a headbutt, because you need to be fucking knocked over.
Right, and then even if he does, so you're just like, oh, I guess I'll just buy a bunch of attacks and boost a hit, and then even if you do that, you're like, okay, dice damage, this sucks, actually.
Boost hit, buy boost hit, you're not killing Gitarix.
If you're having to boost a hit, like, you want to be, like, dice plus four or something, you know, sweet.
Yep.
But, I mean, that's the downside. But, you know, he's, like, that's the thing is that he was not built for offense. It seems really clear to me that he was built to be a tank.
Yeah, he feels like a fortress to me. You know, he is a great castle the enemy must besiege.
Which is so unfortunate that he's only got 48 hit points. I understand that welts are a thing, but...
Well, I mean, having seen, and I imagine you've seen also, the list built around him work. You know, when it actually does, you can see why that list couldn't have been any better than it is. You know, if he had 10 more hit points or 2 more armor or something, that list might be the definition of trolls. Like, it might be the list that you see nowadays.
Maybe. I'm not sure about that, even.
Fair enough.
But, I mean, we don't know, you know. It's kind of pointless to...
You're not going to be able to persuade someone that they should just let you make up some rules so you can test.
Unfortunately, I don't have that sway.
So we've gone through the troll... Oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, the thing is, like, if you can do anything to try and help him survive even farther, like, that's going to get you definitely more use out of him. So, like, Gunburn can make a wall
that helps.
Put in front of him from far away. You know, Dinis has to be pretty close to put her wall next to him, and then she's oftentimes going to die. But Gunburn can do it from safety. Gristle can stop models from charging him, which drastically increases survivability. Stops warding from charging him. Grim can also, you know, at Prime Grim can stop models from charging.
Yeah, or like feet. Now you go again, big guy.
Yeah, and then the feet also helps him.
Yeah, be accurate.
The thing is, the most of the time that I play him, he actually ends up doing more attacks with his spray over the course of the game than anything, just because.
Yeah, I've had the same thing with my World Wrath. Like, for most of the game, he's just tooling around shooting his gun. On one round, he fights with his fists, and then the next round, he's killed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty typical, I would say. But that's the thing, is, like, a lot of the times, I feel like Gargantuans and Colossals were sort of balanced around the fact that you go in to try and kill them, and if you don't, you get heavily punished.
Mm-hmm.
And the Mountain King does not have as much of an ability to do that, I feel like, just because of his low accuracy.
If you were enumerating the four Gargantuans in terms of best to worst, how would that look?
Well, I mean, I would probably not put the Mountain King on the bottom of that. I think that might be the World Wrath spot. What do you think?
I say if you build the whole list around them, then the Mammoth is the best, the Mountain King is the second best, Wold Wrath is the third best, Archangel is the fourth best. If you just drop it in the list, like, ooh, I've got 20 points, I'm dumping in my guy, I'd go Mammoth, Archangel, Wold Wrath, Mountain King is last.
You put the Archangel above the Wold Wrath because of the Wold Wrath's animus?
The Wold Wrath, is not as good as the Archangel, to my mind, if, neither's being supported, because the Wold Wrath's animus is so good, and if the Wold Wrath is not knocking his friends down, because, say, P. Balder has his, you know, thing up, and he's getting his blessed weapons, he can be quite effective.
Alright. That's interesting. I think I agree with that. Yeah. I haven't actually seen, of all of them, the Archangel is actually the one that I have not seen. At all.
It's night and day of Archangel versus Archangel in Pythagoras's list with Pythagoras's aura and spiny growth, or just the other one kind of tooling around being like, look at me, I'm a dragon, oh god, I'm dead.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's absolutely true. Turns out plus 4 armor.
Yeah, and getting to play twice.
Yeah, that too. Yeah. I can't believe I didn't errata that.
Well, between that and the pot, you could be like, wow, you played that Legion player, how'd it do? Oh, I pulled it out at the end, attrition victory. Okay, how many kill points? You're like, 84?
80.
What? I had to kill that thing twice, and then there was like 10 free shredders.
I guess you got a free round. Free round of the tournament. But yeah, you know, I think I would agree with that. He's probably the second best gargantuan.
I think the mammoth is better than all the others.
No question there.
I don't understand how they're all on the same scale. He's like a colossal slipped into the gargantuan side.
Oh yeah, he's amazing. He has everything. He's got it all.
So, any cool tech on trolls you want to share with our listeners who are also your listeners since I post this on your site?
Keep in mind
I will totally use this against you.
I got nothing off the top of my head right now. I've been sort of spouting wisdom all throughout this cast.
That's fair. What do you think about taking a minion warlock in a troll army now that you guys have primal?
You mean like in a two caster game?
No, I'm sorry, like a Roshan Brine or Wrong Eye Snapdragon.
Oh.
Just like, you think those guys have gotten better now that Rock gives you primal?
I don't know. I mean, they still have their frenzy. I haven't thought about that, actually. The thing that I've been thinking about was taking, this is tech from like a year ago. This is something that I was like obsessed with like a year ago that I've never
Welcome
really...
to the future past.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to figure out a good way to get this to happen and I could never do it. But, Brunnenlug. I feel like those guys, I never ever see those guys ever. Sometimes you see Roshan Brine, and you see Wrong Eye and Snapjaw all the time, actually.
I see Wrong Eye and Snapjaw mostly from Cricks, because they're like desperate for heavies, and
yeah,
Wrong Eye shows up, he's like, hey man, I've got some POW 17s, and only in Cricks, like, oh sweet, please bring some POW 17s.
Mercs actually really appreciate Wrong Eye and Snapjaw a lot too.
Oh yeah, now they can get an armor buff from him.
Yeah, both the armor buff and then also a POW 17 Wrong Eye. Or POW 17 Snapjaw equals the highest POW of any of their non-colossal warjacks. So
I recently had Epic Magnus with fucking Bullet Dodger on him and Spiny Growth backed up by Rocinante face tanking in my zone.
Yeah, you're not going to kill him.
I was like, this is comedic. The son of a bitch is def 16, 18 versus shots, moves if you miss him, has, you know, plus 2 extra points of armor. What the hell kind of a thing is this?
Your heavies take a D3 damage if they manage to punch him. Yeah, that's really good.
This is weird shit.
No, but the thing is, Rush is actually friendly too. So, I thought about taking those guys a couple of times and just putting Rush on the beasts and seeing how far I can. Because, you know, Rush and Prime, they've already got a 13-inch threat. He's already got a 13-inch threat range outside of the box.
I mean. So, You've probably seen the conversion where Mullet Karn's flags have, like, tick marks on them for casters. You could totally do that for Brine. Brine has killed a lot of fucking casters.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He is death.
He gets the juke 5 inches and then charge. You know,
for free.
10.
Invariably, because you have just have to damage him for free charge. Mm-hmm. And with Primal, he's Mat 8, POW, what, 17, 16, 16? I think he's a 15, 14, 14 naturally. And if he fails to kill you, you kill him, or you kill Rorsch, and he takes that one last headbutt at you. It's crit knockdown the whole way. I mean, it's really serious.
Give additional damage die too.
That would knock off Primal, and it would cost 2 to cast. It's
right.
Better to
Primal
put.
Is better.
Yeah, but if you didn't have it, you could go with his Animus, especially because it removes from play. But
I hadn't really thought about it, but yeah, like you could come up with some legitimate Rorsch and Brian assassination.
Oh, I mean, he's the fucking Slayer of Kings, man. I've had P. Kruger's Rorsch and Brian kill a lot of warlocks. You know, he threatens like 17 fucking inches. Everything in the way gets murdered by lightning, and he arrives primaled with reach from lightning tendrils.
That sounds amazing.
There's
let's
a list.
Even more crazy. Let's take him with Jarl and put Quicken on him.
Why not? There's a list I've played a couple times that's the Stormlord with Megalith and a Gorax, and then all 4 minion warlocks and, you know, 2 Gallows Groves and a Wilder, or a Spray Dude. What would the troll version of that look like?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the list again?
Okay, so you get Stormlord with Megalith and a Gorax. Then you have all 4 minion warlocks, 2 Gallows Groves, and a Blackclad.
Hmm.
And you say, look, I brought 5 heavies. I've got the Stormlord's, you know, ability to control the game via that shit. Any of the heavies can kill you because of Primal. We're ready to go. Whenever the fuck you are. You can't shoot us because Stormwall.
We've got two telekinesis guys for threat range increases. There's boosted guns coming at you from all the various warlocks. It plays pretty well, and people don't know all their rules, so they get fucked. The big weakness is, of course, purification, because if you turn off the upkeeps from the warlocks, they're not so cool.
Mm-hmm.
But what would the troll version like? Because you guys can take all four of those guys, too. So, you know, kick out the Stormlord and say, yeah, all right, I'm taking a troll warlock and rock for primal. People, it's also funny because this list is immune to Rampager because everything's a character.
That's fantastic. People have always said that Kalandra is the caster to take for those minion warlocks, but I disagree. I think Jarl is actually probably what's coming to mind for me.
Huh. Well, I do like Jarl. So Jarl would take probably rock and an impaler, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And then the thing is, like, Jarl is super. He's one of our most fury selfish casters. So he doesn't want to.
Yeah.
You know.
Each round he would just relax with his impaler animus. Rock would chill out and give anybody who needed it primal. You'd have your feet, which would defend your army.
He would probably kill four models with magic bullets.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
in particular, probably, fuckers like Gorman.
Yeah, and you'd probably upkeep Quicken on one of the heavies. Like, I'd start it off on Brian, because that just sounds really funny to me. Brian.
Can anybody move through enemy models under the feet, or only faction?
I believe it is faction only.
That's too bad.
Yeah, but, I mean, you'd probably use the feet then for just purely as defense. Being able to block line of sights for an entire turn, and that's something that those minions really want.
And then if they can't get rid of what's it called, upkeeps, or they get rid of them with iron, you know, if they don't have purification, then the round after the feet, Dahlia moves up into their army and they can't charge. I mean, you think Gristle is awful about that. You could have a solo that's down their throat.
You there?
Yeah, sorry.
Sorry, so you said the round after the feet?
Dahlia moves down their shit. And just, you know, hey, I'm singing, you can't move, or you can't get any orders.
Yeah.
You know, she can move into base with an enemy war beast, and it has to trample, because they can't get her out of the thing, because she's def 20 when she's engaged with transfers and all that shit.
Yeah, she's a pain.
And her snake's got a spray. It's cool.
I just wish the snake was better.
Come on. Reach, spray, what do you want? It can kill the book. The Harbinger can't stop it from killing the book if it gets the crit.
That's true.
Done.
That's true. We've already got the swamp troll for that.
Oh, true. I neglect to consider your swamp trolls.
I think Jarl would probably be... That might be a fun list to try, actually. Just because I'm thinking, like, Rorsch and Brian's distraction... their diversionary tactics, or whatever they call it, that's he gets to make a full advance, right?
Yep, both of them.
So he actually gets +4 inches of threat range off the sprint, or off of of Quicken.
Yeah.
With Jarl. So you could get a 17-inch brine charge.
Speaking from some experience with playing lists, like, I've played it, like, I don't know, 10 or 20 times, Brunn and Lug are the ones who really don't do cool, fun stuff. They're just a fighting heavy.
Yeah,
If you replace them with a normal guy, you've got the more competitive version of it, because Dahlia and Scareth are weird, and they ask a question. If the enemy can't get rid of their upkeep and they rely on that sort of thing, they have a real problem. The Ninja Pig is this endlessly threat-range beast. Wrong Eye and Snapjaw is a legit beast in terms of being a tough guy, and you can bring along a snapper to give all your beasts +2 arm.
Well, that's faction only.
Well, yeah, but you've got three faction heavies, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Huh. Yeah, you're right.
It's not dreadful. Another thing I've occasionally seen is I've seen a Roadhog be deployed with Brian just to give snipe defections that, or sprint defections that don't normally have it. Trolls and Scorn. Or not Scorn. What are they called? Legion. Not dreadful.
No, I'm starting to kind of like this list.
Finals, man, it's going to be Stormlord in those four versus Jarl in those four. Like, this just got weird.
Yeah, that would be the best.
You know the bear has fucking Pathfinder?
Yeah, and immune to cold.
That's so weird.
Like, one of the only, like, one of the, like, four models in the game that's immune to cold.
It's gonna come out, man. The climactic moment, Epic Sorcerer pops her feet, and you're like, bitch, immune to cold.
And then they're like, well, you're only armor 18.
No, 20. You've got the spiny growth.
Oh, there you go. It's all getting better.
It's all about it, man. Vision.
I want that bear to be so good, but yeah, they just don't have any.
Okay, so like the problem, I wrote this whole article on Muse a while back about the uses of the four minion locks, but the problem with Brenn and Lug is that what they want to do, they can't. They want to counterpunch you. You hit them, and then they just both flank and fuck you into the floor. But mm-hmm. there's no reason for them to survive.
Yeah.
You know, Brunn is actually a bit survivable. He's basically a 15/18.5 when you count in the Stonehold mm-hmm. and the thing, and he's got transfers until he dies. But if they just attack Lug, you know, that's that.
Yeah.
Lug is a 12/18 with 27 boxes. He's meat. There's nothing he can survive.
Really squishy for. He's very squishy for what you would consider an armored bear.
Yeah, right? I mean, I guess he's just a normal bear, not a magical monster, but still, come on.
Right. Well, he's wearing armor. That should help a little bit.
I know, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they are disappointing. The thing is, like, it's exactly like you say, you know, they can counterpunch, but they're solid. I mean, the way that we.
No,
I referred to Lug as Moloch Bear before because he's basically Moloch Karn in bear form.
I mean, I've had
half 15 weapon master if he gets flank.
I've had Megalith be like, "I'm going to telekinesis dude to turn his back." What's his face? The Blackclad hits him with Hunter's Mark. Brunn charges. Now it doesn't matter that Lug is out of his command range because you're in his 6-inch, you know, silliness range because he's got fucking Hunter's Mark
mm-hmm.
and he pounces on him and just fucking shreds him, you know, with Primal he ends up a Pow 17 weapon master and just God fucks him. But I mean, anybody's cool when the telekinesis and druid drag happens, you know, once they're laying their ass down in the middle of your army, somebody could kill him.
Yeah. You're really turd polishing at that point.
Yeah. It's like Epic Haley running Triumph. He's like, accelerate TK. I'm loving this thing. It pumps out two awesome stealth ignoring shots around. Fuck, man, can I bond it, you know? Like,
yeah.
The rest of the world is like, okay, Haley. Yeah, everything's cool when you're fucking Haley.
How about you just take a Stormwall?
Another way you could kill Tartarus is to run a model near him and feet, and then while he stands around with his dick in his hands, charge him with weapon masters.
There you go. That's probably my favorite way of killing him.
Well, epic Haley, right? She's just, the caster is so great.
Yeah. Well.
All right, man. Thanks for recording with me. I will be posting this probably later on tonight. I've gotten together all these recordings, and we're going to go up. Any one last thing say to the troll players of the world who might be tempted to play P-Gristle because you have this irrational fondness for her?
Rational? It's totally rational.
No, it
isn't. Play P-Gristle. She's amazing. That's
she doesn't even have reach.
She doesn't need it. She's that good.
All right. Good night, world.
Good night.